Good evening, everybody. Justin Kaufman here on Download 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock. Excited to be here. Beautiful Michigan Avenue once again. Beautiful Tuesday night in Chicago. Tonight's program is solely about rabbits. If you listen to this program, you know that I've been having trouble with my rabbits. They're not my rabbits. They're the Earth's rabbits, but they like to eat all of my flowers, and I'm sick of it. I brought this to your attention, Download Nation. You gave me such great, great suggestions, including eating them. I'm not going to eat them.
People, you know, in France, that's...
And people will say, oh, it tastes really good. I'm like, yeah, I know.
I had it at a restaurant in Paris, and I have to say...
It was good?
I'm not really into rodents. Rabbits, it's hard to... It's kind of funny when you think about it. Rabbits are rodents.
They are.
And they're adorable.
In my case, they are. I mean, they have a single... I would say, I was thinking about this before the segment, or before tonight, and the Chicago Botanic Gardens coming in tonight. Jacob Burns is back to do a call-in about late summer gardening, getting ready for the fall, getting ready for the winter, what to do with your plants. There's a lot to talk about with Jacob, but I want to talk about rabbits because these guys won't – they have probably cost me $45.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to lie to you. There have been a couple of trips to Home Depot in the last month and a half to replace flowers that were essentially eaten. Annuals or perennials, whichever you call it. Jacob explained it to us last time I was here. If you're listening for the first time to Download, I am a novice gardener.
Yeah, me too.
At the lowest end.
And the name annuals and perennials doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah, it's one of them, one of the two, and the Download Nation's going to be mad at me because they got mad last time I had this combo, but one of the two is the plant that just keeps growing, like each...
It comes
each,
back.
Yeah, each summer comes
annually,
back, each spring.
But when annually. You use the word, he's a perennial favorite, you mean it comes back every year.
I think perennial comes back. Annual means it's only for the time that
I say,
plant it.
You know, I have to pay my taxes annually. You pay every year. So perennial and annual mean the same thing.
Well, I'm not going to... I don't want to be the one that speaks for the gardening community in mass because I'm probably saying it wrong, but I think it is perennials are... more expensive, and they are the ones that you plant, and they come back like a hydrangea. Yeah. And an annual is going to be, this is just for the months that are spring to summer. The problem I have is I bought an annual just to, you know, because one of the plants that I had, the rabbits just ate it. They went crazy. They ate it. So now what I did is I went to Home Depot late in the season. I got a plant that's just like pink and red. Didn't really care what it was, just to fit that space. And it took maybe 3 days for the rabbits to eat it again. And the problem I had is I had that spray, that weird deer spray or rabbit spray that I got from Home Depot, and it didn't really work, and it attracted flies. So I don't know. I'm exasperated. I'm like a bad infomercial. Oh,
well,
what am I going to do?
The botanic garden person will
yeah,
know?
Jacob's going to know because I think I might have scared him off on the email because I was like, hey, are you coming back in? We had such a great convo. You know, I'd love to talk to you again. And he said something about the rabbits, and I went off. It was like a late-night email, like six paragraphs. I'll tell you another thing about these expletive rabbits, and he did not respond. I may have taken it too far with our regular botanist here on the Download. We'll talk with Jacob Burns. Also tonight, Simon Helberg is here for some of the segments that don't have to do with
That's cool.
flowers in the front. Simon Helberg, of course, on The Big Bang Theory, plays Howard Wolowitz, the... shaggy-haired, turtlenecked nerd on Big Bang Theory, but he is the pianist in Florence Foster Jenkins, the new Meryl Streep movie that comes out this weekend. So he was in town. We're going to talk to him about that role. He's really, really good. It's a great movie. It's really something that I probably wouldn't have sought out, to be honest. Like 1940s sort of opera singer movies are really not my thing, not my bag with Meryl Streep. But I saw it for the interview, and I have to say that it was really, really good. It was the kind of thing where I really felt like it had a voice and something to say, and you know what, I'm a better person for seeing it.
But she was a bad opera singer, right?
The bit of the movie, which is it's amazing, it's a great idea for a movie, is she was a socialite in New York who wanted to sing, or she was a singer, she fancied herself a singer, so she had money to get the best teachers and the best pianists and put on shows. She owned a music club. The only problem is she could not sing. She was terrible. And through that, you start to ask yourself the question, what's more important? The art, you know, the actual product, at the end of the day, or the passion and joy that goes into it. And I think that's where they were really kind of, that's what we're going to talk with Simon about coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Adam Hoge will join us to talk about Bears camp. They're doing that thing again with Alshon Jeffrey. Maybe I'll play. Maybe I won't. You're just going to have to tune in. It's like a bad cliffhanger. It's like bad promo for sports. I don't know if I'll be there. You'll just have to tune in to Fox 32. Check out to see if Alshon Jeffrey plays for three plays. And also tonight, and I'm very excited about this, Molly Green's going to be back to Fan Jam the Olympics. We did it last night. It was so fun. And I have a couple of questions for her already. You know, we saw Serena Williams lost today, which, you know, tennis is one of those sports, and we really never get into it, but it's one of those sports in the Olympics where it's not like basketball where there's, like, dominance across the board. The players that play for the different countries are all the best tennis players in the world. So it's like doing the U.S. Open. You know, that was what we were hoping we'd get out of golf, and a lot of the American players bailed out because they want to play. But it's different than, like, basketball where it's the, you know, the full team from Venezuela. It's probably not NBA caliber. But in tennis, you're playing against, it's just, you might as well be Wimbledon. So what? Serena Williams lost. Big deal. So what? Who cares? News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier tonight. I'm sorry, not Rob Martier. Bob Kessler. I just said that in a...
The first name was a...
Well, it's so funny, it just rolls off the tongue, but sure. Rob is on vacation, so Bob Kessler's in. Esmeralda Leanne will be here later. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, let's get the show on the road. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download. Let's get to the carryout, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Donald Trump spoke at a rally and said if she, Hillary Clinton, gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is. What? Critics say that's essentially a call to shoot his political rival. His campaign says, no. It's about unity. Second Amendment folks are gonna come together, togetherness. Synergy of vote, please. This on a day when several high-ranking GOP officials call him out for being unfit for president. See, with Trump, you want it to be entertaining, but more often than not, it starts as a laugh and then it gets real dark and scary. When asked for comment, Hillary Clinton was like, I'm not talking. Not going to say a word. Let this one ride out. Police say that three West Side gangs were conspiring to kill police officers, actually training gang members to shoot cops. The West Side gangs were like, no, when we said shoot, we meant we want to shoot for the stars and unify togetherness, synergy, vote. Also, really, leave it to the gangbangers to get in the way of a serious issue of police and community relations. Nobody's talking to you or about you. Don't speak for anybody. You keep being thug criminals and terrorizing your communities for drug money. Go cops. Chicago had the most violent day in a decade yesterday. And last I checked, cops had nothing to do with it. Rod Blagojevich appeared via video in a federal courtroom today to hope for a resentencing. The end result, Judge Zagel, again, no mercy. I feel like that's a Jean-Claude Van Damme reference. Not sure. No mercy. No, maybe it was Transformers, a cartoon. Anyway, Blago will serve the full 14-year sentence. Many wonder if the sentence is too harsh, especially since no bribe money actually changed hands. But Blago is no saint, and political corruption of this magnitude selling Senate seats can't be allowed. And he did go on Celebrity Apprentice, which, in hindsight, probably should have extended his sentence. Today, Blago apologized for the way he acted during his trial, but not for the actual crime. In other words, he's a dude. Delta Airlines had another terrible day of catching up after their computers broke down 2 days ago. The CEO came out again with another apology, saying, "This is not who we are." And then he added, "We're more of a try to nickel and dime you after you check in, not before the computers. Jeez, who do you think we are?" Changes at the show Saturday Night Live. Taryn Killam and Jay Farrow and John Rudnitsky are out. And Lorne Michaels hints there may be several new cast members announced next month. Maybe some from Chicago. It's an election year, so Killam and Farrow, who played Obama, may be missed. But who are we kidding? There are going to be so many Trump-Clinton cameos. It's going to ruin the whole first part of the season. Oh, look who's here. It's the They said something funny and looked at the camera. Oh. Ugh. In weather, hazy, but still, I'll take it. Keep it up, Chicago. Keep it up. Great start to August. In sports, the women's gymnastics team just leveled the competition and took home gold today. Exciting. So exciting. It was held during the day in Rio. Is swimming and beach volleyball really that popular? I want to see gymnastics in real time. They mess up, I want to be there to tweet about it. Not cool, NBC. Not cool, Rio. I swear, if you do this for the handball final, there will be blood. No, I don't mean violence. I mean, you know, blood. Like, you know, blood brothers. We're unity. We're together. Togetherness. Synergy. Vote. Also, did the men's volleyball team win? I watched a bit of their match against Italy, and I was confused. The Italians wore all white except for the one guy who wore blue. I'm sure that's a volleyball thing, or were the Italians just short a guy and borrowed someone from Greece? Like softball? You got one more? Can we get one? Yes, I'd love to help. I play. I'm a very good spiker. I don't know what accent that was. The Cubs are at home at Wrigley tonight. John Lackey, Big Country, will go tonight because Jason Hamill's getting an extra day of rest for bereavement. He was reactivated today. The Cubs are surprisingly healthy at this juncture of the season, sans Schwarber. But pretty amazing, knock on wood, that the team is still intact. It's not wood. That's some sort of weird plastic, but close enough. The Sox go to Kansas City where Chris Sale tries for his 15th win. He didn't win at all in July, and he was suspended. Not a great second half for Chris Sale so far. The Royals are pretty much out of it as well, but they have a pool in their outfield bleachers, which, you know, is pretty awesome. I mean, no diving or swimming, just looking, but still, a pool. Also, Avi Garcia on the DL today with a knee injury. In Olympic basketball news, Jimmy Butler and the U.S. basketball team only won by 44 points yesterday, which just got me worried. Am I the only one? I think we're all a little bit worried. The Bears are back at it in Bourbonnais. Ted Larson is the new center after Grassou blew out his ACL. Alshon's still limited, and there's no word on whether or not he'll play on Thursday night against the Broncos. Oh, this little dance. So I missed you so, Chicago Bears injury report. Oh, all season long it's going to be maybe, maybe not. Maybe, maybe not. And finally tonight, Tim Tebow announced that he's going to try and be a professional baseball player. This after a run as a professional football player. Tebow would become the first athlete to be terrible at both. That's the carryout for August 9th, 2016. Hey, you ordered the burger, right? It's all in the bag. We ran out of aluminum foil, so it's really just a Build-A-Burger instead. Coming up, we're going to talk about, I guess this is considered the Women's Suffrage History Month. It's 96 years since the 19th Amendment. We'll talk with Rebecca Saib, who's in studio, about that. Coming up here on 720 WGN. It's Download. Stay with us. This is a Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, Simon Helberg's going to be here. He is the actor. He's on The Big Bang Theory, and he's also in Florence Foster Jenkins' great Meryl Streep movie that comes out this weekend. I saw it. I loved it, and I'm excited to talk to Simon just about the concept of passion and joy and how it relates to art, because the movie is about a New York socialite who sings poorly. It's a true story, but it's about how she sort of cultivated a community around her and people that loved her and went out of her way. She became a cult hit. She played Carnegie Hall, and it really is just about what's more important, the art, the product, or the passion and joy you put into it. So we'll talk with Simon Helberg about that coming up at 8 o'clock. This month will mark the 96th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, women's suffrage, the right to vote. It's hard to believe that Hillary Clinton will be the first woman to be a candidate for president in a major party. 96 years. And as we saw during the Democratic National Convention, the fact became pretty clear. It brought emotion to many women who have never been able to see someone of their kind, someone of that looks like them, in that position. Joining me now is Rebecca Saib. Saib's the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. She's also the program director for Women in Public Leadership, an initiative at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
So I'm interested in this. I didn't realize that August was Suffrage Month, and yeah. You know, you sent me the actual.
I know. I just thought that would be fun.
Yeah, it's fun to see the actual doctrine from the 19th Amendment. But 96 years. I mean, right. Talk about. I mean, you don't study necessarily suffrage, but. But as somebody who's who knows about it, I mean, was it difficult to pass that? Was it something
yes.
that 96 years ago it was political climate like it is today?
The political climate in some ways was quite similar in terms of the very, very strong feelings for and against. And really, it started in 1848 with women gathering at Seneca Falls and issuing a so-called Declaration of Sentiments in which they talked about the right to vote, and from 1848 to 1920. So, you know, and there were lots of sort of steps along the way, including after the Civil War when African-Americans got the right to vote, but African-American men. And that was another, you know, point at which people recognized that notwithstanding color, gender was a factor. So, and then it took another 40 years, and people chained themselves and did all kinds of things. You know, here we are 96 years later. I thought about it today because it's my mom's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Yeah.
And thank you. And my mother was born 4 years after.
Wow.
So, you know, and I have friends who are older whose mothers were born before suffrage. And, of course, we saw this 100-year-old woman at the DNC, you know, talking about it. And so you mentioned passion and joy a minute ago in another context. There's a lot of passion and joy among a lot of women in this country.
Well, you saw it, I mean, at the Democratic National Convention. And you know, we talked about it here on the program, just the idea that so many different women were expressing a feeling. You know,
right.
a sort of this is something I haven't. This is history, something I haven't seen in my lifetime. I'm interested in how that translates because you know, you see that sort of play out in social media, and we almost you know it was definitely a big thing in 2008 with Barack Obama being the first black president. But it doesn't seem like Hillary Clinton is pushing that as sort of a campaign platform.
Well, it's interesting because you know I think that the. At the convention itself, the introduction by her daughter, the movie they showed beforehand, there were some other media pieces they did, really did emphasize that. But once she hit the campaign trail the next day, I guess on the bus tour, she started talking about policy and qualifications and why this was an important point in history. And I think that, you know, it's kind of the same challenge that President Obama had in 2008. You know, yes, this is a historic moment, and yes, I take pride and people ought to take pride in this advance in our nation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm a candidate with ideas and policies and a platform, and I really want to convince people who may doubt that I'm the right person to be president.
You know, it's for staying on the suffrage line, I mean, from the idea of the right to vote to exercising that right to vote to becoming a voting bloc. Women have become a voting
right.
bloc in the way that, you know, you'll see it in CNN and every place. They're like, well, who's going for who? It's amazing to me that hasn't produced more women candidates over time. The fact that it's such a powerful bloc that it seems like candidates and politicians are trying to reach out and trying to woo that vote.
Well, there has been a sequence over time where the bloc has become larger and larger. You know, there was a point in the mid-70s after the Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade, which was, beyond the issue of reproductive health, was a whole statement about women's autonomy and women's right to participate in the workplace in a variety of ways. And there was a bloc of women at that time who started, you know, that's the Hillary Clinton generation, pushing for women's participation in politics. There was another in the mid-80s when Barbara Mikulski, who's retiring mm-hmm. this year, mm-hmm. was elected to the U.S. Senate, and then again in the early 90s. So it's been a gradual process, not as fast as many would like. But as we sit here today, the latest polls I saw as I was, you know, before I came over, showed Clinton 24 points ahead among women, and that's women of various kinds. So there's a substantial understanding, it seems to me, that she's the candidate of women.
Sure. Rebecca Sives, my guest. She's the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. She's also the program director for Women in Public Leadership, the initiative at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. I'm going to take a quick break. We come back. I really want to talk about sexism in this election. And something that I've seen much more and I've been more keen to, we've seen it, from the way that questions are being thrown at the candidates, the way that the overall sort of stereotype of, who's lying, who's dishonest, the continued sort of way that both candidates are couched. Mm-hmm. It's becoming more and more clear that they're, and some critics will say that, sexism is at play. So we'll talk with Rebecca about how it is sort of manifesting itself in the 2016 presidential race. More with us. Stay with us. It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Rebecca Sives, my guest. She's the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. She's a program director for Women in Public Leadership, an initiative at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. We're talking about the 2016 election, and one thing that I've seen, and I've seen this sort of eloquently told on social media. Someone will put together a clip of all the right. questions that are being asked of Hillary Clinton and right. the questions being asked of Donald Trump.
You saw
Trump.
The same thing I saw. Right.
But how does sexism, you've worked on a lot of different campaigns mm-hmm. in your life, you've been in politics, how does sexism usually manifest itself when it comes to a political campaign?
Well, the first manifestation is the barrier to getting in the first place. And I think that, there's an assortment of reasons that have been determined for that happening. Men get asked, women don't. Men see a problem, they say, I want to be a state senator. A woman sees the same problem. She says, I got to go to school and study it some more. So, the first barrier that's essentially based on gender is the access. The second barrier is the same sort of attitudinal framework in the political and governmental environment that you see in other large institutions in mm-hmm. which, women don't advance at the same rate. They don't, I guess they have to get equal pay, but if they're not advancing at the same rate, they have unequal pay. They don't get asked to be, in special opportunities that may lead to other things. I think we've only had, for instance, on the campaign side, two women who've run presidential campaigns ever. There's a dozen women who could do that sitting in Washington today.
Is it because the slating process and the sort of major party process is just mm-hmm. a good old boys club or that kind of thing where it's the same kind of thing historically?
Historically it was. You've heard this in the business context too. People consider and offer opportunities and promote the people they know who are sitting around in the locker room with them or the golf club or, the bar. It sounds sort of silly or parochial, but it's still true. And, people are comfortable with people that are like them. Well, a woman is not like them. What's she really going to be like when we have to discuss this? And, I can tell you from my own experience as a public official, I am of the generation that was, the only woman in the room many times. It's different when you're the only one. And, a person of color will tell you that as well. You're not part of the group. There isn't this common mm-hmm. understanding, and therefore you're treated differently. And usually the differently is unequal. So I don't think it's any worse in politics.
Right.
But it's definitely a factor, and I think witness, the continuing, fascination with, Hillary's hair or whatever.
Well, it also, there's been movements in business and tech sectors, sure. The lean in concept and also at the same time, these stereotypes and generalizations where, a woman comes in and she may be aggressive and therefore, this is too much, as opposed mm-hmm. to a man doing the same thing. In politics, it seems to be similar because Hillary Clinton has gotten a bad rap
yes.
For essentially being a politician. I hate to say that, but also, you know, everything that she's done, you know, pushing forward things. I mean, there has been this sort of rap that she just is too aggressive, or nobody likes her, or she's all the kind of same stuff that we've already kind of processed in the business world.
Well, I think that's right. I think you hit the nail on the head that politics requires, perhaps more than any other profession, you know, singing your own praises, pushing yourself forward, you know. And if you're a woman, you have to do that, or if you're a man, you have to do that. But it's non-traditional behavior for a woman. And I think that in that context, that was one of the reasons why you saw at the Democratic Convention the great emphasis on her being a grandmother, on her being a mother, on her being a wife, on her sitting at the kitchen table during that video, you know, that they showed at the outset. I mean, there's still this consciousness of you can't be too different from other women while you're being.
So that's
really
all
assertive.
Politics. I mean, in the way that that's on purpose to almost relate to women in a way that. As opposed to putting her in a suit and in a boardroom and showing her, you know, taking down Osama bin Laden in a video.
Well, I mean, she also has to project authority. I mean, the POTUS is the most important person in the world, right? So there's this balance that has to be struck. I think what we're saying is that because sexism still exists broadly, so to speak, that any woman candidate any woman who's contemplating a political career has to find that way to balance, you know, yes, I'm a politician, I'm going to put myself out there, but yes, I'm also a woman you can relate to, whether you're a man or a woman.
It seems in this election, and you know, trying to keep the names out of it, I guess, you know, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, but regardless of who they are, it seems like if a woman is running for the office of president for the first time, is actually a nominee for a major party. This election is a tough one because the person she's running against isn't necessarily afraid of sort of sexist backlash. You're not
to the
afraid.
Contrary.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it's riling up a base that says, yeah, enough of this PC stuff, you know, like he should be able to say what he wants to say. But I mean, as opposed to maybe another politician who is going to be a little bit more respectful of the issues that historically, you know, preceded.
Well, I kind of think, I mean, I think you're right. He has, you know, it's on paper and in print all over the place, the kinds of statements he's made about women in general, forgetting his opposition in particular. I think that just belies a lack of respect. And to me, I think what's going on there is, you know, I mean, I grew up in a family that was intensely patriotic, you know, and my mother was an immigrant. You know, I've seen my mother kiss the American soil. I mean, we were taught that, you know, public service was the highest calling. And in that highest calling are people who know the Constitution.
Are going to show respect for people.
Show respect for others, who care about public policy, who respect their opponents, who understand that a lot of time it's about compromise, not about bullying. That's not going to get you there.
Right. I'm interested, and this is something that I think a lot of voters are trying to differentiate between. The idea of, is our attacks on Hillary Clinton and, you know, the dishonest claim, the lying claim, it seems to be the big one that people just really can't trust her. Are they rooted in sexism and the idea that, you know, this is the first woman presidential candidate? Or is there a way to divide it to say, no, they're rooted in the fact that Hillary Clinton has been a lifer politician who we've known since 1990, 1991, at least in the public sphere, and we've seen her go through so many different flip-flops and different plan of ways. As a politician, is it okay to not like Hillary Clinton because she's a politician?
Well, I mean, lots and lots of politicians, from the president on down, change positions on a pretty regular basis. That's just part of that MO, that's what they have to do in many situations. The question of dishonesty is something else, whether it's man or woman. And I guess what I would say is that what's been shown in the political science literature is that, you know, women in public life, whether in business or in politics, are sort of held to a higher standard of, so to speak, moral and ethical behavior. So the higher you are, the further you fall, right? That's kind of and I think in Hillary Clinton's situation, the combination of being held to that higher standard and having changed her policy positions on issues that people think are substantial, you know, sort of combined to say, well, who is this woman really? And therefore, do I trust her? Not necessarily a logical strain of thought, but an understandable one.
Let me ask you, I mean, the book you've written, Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. Obviously, having a candidate for president is going to encourage women to run for other public offices. But this campaign is nasty, and it's dirty. And is it the kind of thing that could have an adverse effect on women saying, you know what, I don't want anything to do with this?
So I'll tell you something interesting. You know, after my book was published, I did lots of speaking. I went all over the country. I mean, I was in the middle of Manhattan. I was in the Delta in Mississippi. And, you know, I mean, really differing places. And the thing that I found, you know, the women who came, and it was mostly women, to hear me talk and buy a book and so on, regardless of their vast difference in kind, all shared this desire to be in public office. And so I think that, you know, there's a set of women, this is what they want to do, just like there's a set of men, this is what they want to do. And I can tell you that they, you know, the issue isn't worrying so much about, you know, I don't want to be a surgeon. Well, so what? There are lots of people who want to be surgeons, right? So, but if I want to be a surgeon and I need a scholarship to go to medical school and I need to get training, then I should have that opportunity. So the book and the conversation here, and I think the effort is about making sure that the women who do want to do it, who understand it's going to be difficult, but, you know, that they have the opportunity. I think that's the thing that I, you know, that they can go out there if they want to.
Rebecca Sive is the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. She's also the program director for Women in Public Leadership, an initiative at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. And she'll be joining us throughout the election season here on The Download. Rebecca, good to see you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Chicago's most accurate weather forecast.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. The new movie, Florence Foster Jenkins, opens up this weekend in theaters. The film starring Meryl Streep is getting great reviews. It's based on the true story of a New York City socialite that takes on a singing career. One small problem? She can't sing. The film is directed by Stephen Frears, and it also stars Hugh Grant and my next guest, Simon Helberg. Helberg plays Jenkins' pianist in the movie, Cosme McMoon. Helberg shines in this movie. He's great. You may know his work from playing Howard in the CBS sitcom The Big Bang Theory. And he's my guest tonight on The Download. Simon Helberg, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Talk about this film, because this is a bit of a departure for you. I mean, you've done a lot of comedy, and I guess this does fall into that category. But talk about how you got this role and what drew you to the script.
Well, the script honestly was brilliant as just a piece of writing. But I can't say that knowing that Meryl Streep and Stephen Frears were involved, it doesn't take a lot to, you know, they didn't have to fight too hard to convince me to be a part of this. It was the other way around. I felt kind of like I cut in line, I guess, somehow. I was put in front of Stephen by Kathleen Chopin, who's the casting director, who I knew from a small movie, We'll Never Have Paris. That was a movie that I directed with my wife. It was very tiny, and she cast that. And I guess I leave a lasting impression, for better or worse. She couldn't shake me out of her dreams. So she told Stephen, "Oh, this is your guy. Sit with him." And then I that was it. It was insane, because I just never in a million years would have thought things happened so seamlessly.
Well, I mean, you obviously have an upper hand in the fact that you can play piano, and
yeah,
that helps. But I mean, how much was that a part? I mean, I've seen interviews with Stephen Frears talking about that was a huge. That was one of the things that just was amazing about working with you.
Yeah. Well, there's so many things that are amazing about working with me, but let's focus on that one. It became a kind of central focus, I think, for him. He's very eccentric, and he can kind of just hyper focus on one thing, and that was it. I don't even think he honestly knew my work as an actor, so he just wanted to know, can you play? And I said, well, yeah, because I thought at least I'll know where to put my hands when they hire the real classical piano player to do this. And he just, all he asked was like, well, can you act and play at the same time? And I said, you know, that voice, it sounds like he ate Gollum. That's sort of my impression of him. But, and I said, well, and I just kept thinking about like Meryl Streep on the other end. And I was like, yes, yes, sure, please. Well, I just would love to meet her. And then I kind of had to do it. She was singing all of it live, and they needed a piano player. They needed the actor to play the piano just so that they could do it. Because if she's going to sing live, right, you can't have it. She can't sing to pre-record. It would just always, you'd lose all the life of
it. And you know, part of her being an amateur singer in this part, I mean, how much of the song is her just kind of winging it? Because it doesn't really follow any sort of
rhythm.
Rhythm or
pitch.
Yeah, pitch. So, I mean, for you as a pianist and an actor in that, I mean, are you surprised every time she's singing or singing around the parts you're playing?
Yeah, that's kind of the joy of it, actually, is because you hope to be surprised as an actor, and she is constantly surprising, even when she's not singing atrociously. She's so alive and so present, but it also couldn't be completely winging it. It couldn't be flailing around,
right,
because actually
right.
The real Florence Foster Jenkins in some ways was closer to hitting those notes than not. And it was actually, that was, I think, what was so appealing about her. It wasn't shrieking, and it was actually very delicate. And she hit the high, what did she hit? It was the high F, I think, above C, which is like no one can do that. I think a parrot, there's a video of a parrot doing it. You know, that's not fair. They are always so high pitched. It was cheating, but I she did it, and so Meryl, it actually was not just about kind of decimating these mm-hmm. pieces. It was actually trying to get there, and Meryl can actually sing, so she kind of could do it well, and then had to kind of dismantle.
How familiar were you with Florence's story? I mean, obviously the script got your attention, but you know, as an actor and a musician, did you have any sense of her work?
No,
in the 40s?
No, I didn't. It sounded familiar to me in some way, because I do love stories like this. I love, you know, when you think about Ed Wood, or you think about even just kind of the phenomenon even of American Idol, or which is a bit different, because I think there's some more exploitative tendencies in reality television than in this movie, which I think is celebrating the passion of the amateur and failing, you know, when you're kind of aiming for the stars is sort of beautiful. It's when you know if your goal is kind of like mediocre, half-hearted kind of attempt at, but there she's singing in Carnegie Hall center stage. It's absolutely crazy, and I think it's funny, but in a very kind of human way. I don't think you're laughing at her.
You end up rooting for her,
I mean,
because I really like the way the movie's constructed, because it isn't necessarily a surprise. I mean, there's a surprise element, but the concept is, as the audience, you're let in on it, and you start to really go along with the characters, Hugh Grant's character, your character, about you know, the play you have to do to the conflict that's inside, about knowing that she's a bad singer and also being supportive and being a part of her joy.
Yeah, I think that definitely is the goal, that when you're that when you're watching this, that we just never wanted to making it. We never wanted to judge. I don't think you ever want to judge a character that you're playing, because otherwise it's like if you're playing a villain, you don't want a lot of mustache twisting. You know, you want to try to get into their head and approach it honestly. And these people were they were the most sincere. You know, even though there was a bit of this sort of circle of deception going on, and she was insulated and slightly deluded, there was also such a sincerity to her and to my character, I think, particularly. So I don't know, it's very genuine.
I said, you mentioned the word joy, and we talk about that concept. I mean, as a performer, as someone on stage, and the passion and the joy that Meryl Streep's character Florence has, it really is beyond the fact of what is expected to be on stage of a singer. There's something that we root for, and there's something that I think kind of resonates in all of us. I liked watching her, regardless of what was coming out of her mouth.
Yeah.
I liked the passion that she brought to wanting to be a singer.
Yeah, that is. I think that's the idea. It's just there's whatever it is, whatever that ineffable quality is why people still listen to her voluntarily. It's not any kind of torture. It's an actual people buy this, and David Bowie put it on his top 10 list of albums all time albums. Well, that's a really hard thing to say. Lots of Alzheimer's. That's what it is. Alzheimer's. What? There's a reason that there was no irony. I don't even think there was no irony coming from her. And I think these people that sat around listening to this, I don't think it was ironic. I think it actually was this kind of strange area where it's like the artist intends one thing and the audience perceives another. And isn't that kind of the way it always is? You know, and I think this movie kind of lives in that. In that area, I think.
You've had a life that sketch comedy was sort of the beginnings for you. I mean, you grew up in L.A. and Santa Monica, but you'd done sketch comedy and you've made your name doing stuff on sitcoms, Big Bang Theory, of course. But, I mean, talk about the transition of working in with actors like Hugh Grant and Meryl Streep, where you're coming in from a background that is, I mean, you know, spot, you're an old school, Arrested Development, like things like that. What was the transition for you to be able to walk in and be able to play this character with a background in comedy?
Well, I didn't want to honor anything but what the part kind of demanded. You know, I didn't want to come in and show off, try to bring comedy to something that where it was unwelcome or where it didn't quite fit. I think that is just where I tend to flourish. I just do more. You know, I get hired for more comedy.
But you could see, I mean, you could easily see the role, Cosme's role of not being funny. Meaning there's this thing where it's like, you know, he comes in and he's a pianist who's been trained. He wants to be, there's a great scene with Hugh Grant about ambition towards the end. But what you bring to it, you bring a real steady, I guess, lack of better word, quirk to it.
Yeah.
That does elevate the comedy.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, I think I tend to see things primarily through that lens, just naturally, you know, that's just how I guess I tend to look at things. But I did also inherently, I thought he was very funny, because there's just something about watching the most ill-suited person take on something that is completely out of their league, which was, he stepped into like the Twilight Zone, really. So he got his dream job, and then it's like everything kind of shattered immediately, and everyone around him was smiling and nodding. And it's just to watch him try to process this. Anytime you get to watch someone process something on screen, it's also kind of, if it's really happening, it's a very exciting thing to watch. But yeah, I think that, you know, and then there's just my face looks the way it does. And then sometimes they shoot it very close and they cut to it. And then people think that's funny.
How much of this story as an actor resonates with you? I mean, there is this sort of thing where there's deception, and there's a lot of people around Florence who do everything they possibly can to not let it on that she's a bad singer. You know, for you, and I read an article just about the idea that you want to know. You ask your wife, you ask other people, you know, like, was I good in this?
Okay?
Am I okay? But, I mean, as an actor, I mean, that was one of the joys, is that she wasn't really transfixed on finding out if people liked her or loved her.
Right. Yeah. I think it was like a lovely byproduct. You know, she sort of got to revel in these glowing reviews that were bought and paid for by her. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, she wasn't quite aware of that. But I think it is refreshing to be able to completely suspend self-consciousness and judgment. And then again, I do think there is something about this movie in every moment of it where there's judgment is either not present or it's very frowned upon.
Right.
And that's really nice. And, I think it's a hard habit to kick, and most actors are very...
Well, I mean, it comes from everywhere. I mean, comes from in social media, from other places. And it's not even judgment to even you. It's surroundings about, you know, anything superficial is possible. But
For sure. And she probably wouldn't have existed, you know, or been able to thrive now, you know, because of social media. And that's kind of, I don't know, it's sort of sad, because people can't really blossom, or you can't do, if you do a stand-up set and you're workshopping something, it ends up on the internet, and it's not completed yet, or you don't get to kind of discover for yourself and fail for yourself. And I do think failing is is a very intimate and important part of self-discovery and who you ultimately become. And if you're not even allowed to do that on your own, that's a scary thing.
Well, I mean, it's a great movie about passion, about failure, and about music, and about finding your voice.
Yeah.
The movie Florence Foster Jenkins opens in theaters this weekend. One of the stars, Simon Helberg, is in the studio with me. Simon, thanks for stopping by and talking to us.
It's been great. Thank you for having me.
No doubt about that. I watch Chicago's very own WGN Morning News every morning. I love that show. I have to say, you know, we had the conversation with Scott Smith about maybe a week ago about how Facebook might be changing the way that with Facebook Live and other products, changing the way local news is done, challenging some of the network news for eyeballs in the future. And I thought about it because in that conversation we were talking about how, you know, well, it might be that anchors are going to have to adjust to the style of Facebook Live. There may be more channels. You know, once streaming is available to anybody on their phone, you can essentially have newscasts. And I thought about WGN Morning News as one of those shining examples, and the reason why they're number one all the time is because they've already made that transition. They are not your sort of standard traditional anchor.
They let it all hang out.
They just are comfortable in their skin,
they
and they get rid of the pretense. And
they've been doing it for Mike.
Yeah.
20 years, I want to say.
And, you know, they're
it doesn't seem like it, though.
It makes me think that they would be a good shining example for sure for anyone who's thinking about, you know, how can I be able, if you're a news organization, say, how am I going to be able to change the way we do things for new applications for Facebook Live or other places? Just take a look at what they're doing.
Yeah, and a lot of comedians and stuff who go on their show say they like to do their show because because of the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not your typical kind of.
And Dean's great on it, and there's so many people that come through there, and they do the top nine at nine or top nine stories at nine at 9 a.m. That's my favorite thing. It's a lot of good play. Anyway, great show. Check it out every morning. Coming up, we're going to talk with Adam Hoge, Bears Camp Report. Today, same thing. It's so funny. It's so Chicago Bears, where we're already having in our first preseason game. Will he play or will he not play? Alshon Jeffrey, will he play? I don't know. And you're just at a certain point, you're like, is this how football goes in every town? Does Belichick and the Patriots, they do the same thing? Will he play? Is the running back going to play? I don't know anybody on the Patriots besides Tom Brady. I feel like that's the quintessential like NFL football franchise. That can you name the starting safety for the they have Butler, the corner who was the Super Bowl star.
Didn't they get one of the Bears?
Didn't they like Marty Martellus Bennett and
Martellus
Gronk,
Bennett,
right?
Yeah,
so I guess those guys. Then after that I'm done. And they usually have a pretty good defense. But anyway, I digress. Let's get out of Patriot talk. Welcome to Boston Talk Radio, Sports Radio. We're going to talk. I don't have the accent for it, but so we'll see. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey. We'll check and see if Adam's got any sort of insider to that story. And it's not really that big of a deal because of the preseason game. And I don't understand why they just don't treat it that way. It's almost like they're in preseason training for how to deal with the media. And then coming up at 9 o'clock, Jacob Burns is going to be back to talk about how to take care of my rabbits in the garden. We'll talk about some summer gardening tips. And then also coming up at 9:30, Molly Green's going to join us again to fan jam the Olympics. Saw Katie Ledecky, and it's no spoiler, right? It's live. I think it's live.
It's live. She won her second gold. That was awesome.
Yeah. And also, and I want to try to quiz Molly. Hopefully she's not listening, but why do swimmers wear two caps?
They wear two caps during the race, not...
Yeah, because you'll see it once in a while. Now my sister-in-law pointed it out. Like, why are they? Because there'll be one point where they get to the end, and they look up at their score, and they pull their cap off, and there's another cap. You're like, what happened? What's happening here?
I swim for exercise mostly when it's cold outside. I exercise outside when it's nice. So I'm like looking at how these. Wow, they go far underwater after the flip turn. And, you know, I'm trying to pick up a few techniques like I could.
Yeah, you're thinking about doing some cupping. You're like, I'm going to do some cupping.
No, I don't think I'm going to do cupping.
You know what you need, Bob? You need much bigger shoulders if you're going to be one of these guys. You need to sort of essentially be like a human. Yeah, you need to be a human V.
Yeah.
You know, letter V. That's kind of how they look.
Oh, I read this book called Swimming Stories this woman wrote. She's actually a visual artist, and she could have maybe gone to the Olympics.
Wow.
And she's in her 40s now. She didn't. She opted out in college, but just the amount of time they spend practicing is just tremendous.
Yeah, right. Hey, I've seen Cutting Edge. You know, I know. I mean, if it's anything like ice skating.
I can't. What's Cutting Edge?
Come on. With D.B. Sweeney?
Oh, that's the one where he's the hockey player and becomes the figure skater.
So much training. What's the woman in that movie? Do you remember, Pete? Oh, that was such a great movie. I'm in this. We'll talk
great,
about it
great
later
or
in the
ironically
show.
Great?
No, great, great.
Okay.
Because there's a moment at the end, and I don't want to spoil it for everybody, but at the end they kiss. you know if I'm spoiling a 1988 movie for you. But, yeah, I think I got to tell you guys about I thought of a movie I wanted to watch with my son because I'm on this kick trying to figure out what movies to watch, and I looked it up today on Netflix, and then it said it gave me, would you also like to watch these? And it was a treasure trove of 80s, great 80s movies to watch with my son. So we'll do that segment as well coming up. All right, coming up, we'll talk with Adam Hoge. Stay with us.
All right, kids, what did we learn at Bears Camp today?
Helmets and shoulder pads, who's doing good and who's doing bad? Yeah. It's the Bears Camp with Adam Hoge.
All right, it's a download here on WGN Radio. Adam Hoge joining us in just a minute from Bourbon A. Michael Phelps does win gold in the 200-something. That's my sports reporting for you here on the download. Michael Phelps wins because his mom is crying. A little bit of pushback because he was a little cocky with putting his number one finger up and asking for more applause after he won. Not something you usually see with a swimmer. But, you know, that's something Bob Kessler would do. There's no doubt about it. You feel like you might get a nice run and then quickly go to everybody else in the gym like, I want to hear it. Let me hear it.
You know, I figured out, though, the amount of swimming I do in a week, I think they do in a day when they prepare.
Wow.
So, yeah.
When you swim, do you just go back and forth and back and forth?
I go to 100swimmingworkouts.com, and so I get a different workout. So then you warm up and you do so many freestyles, so many backstroke, breaststroke. There's different drills, like swim the whole length underwater.
Wow.
Not an Olympic length, by the way, for the record, but... still, 25-meter pool underwater.
What I do when I go swimming is I just practice my softball swing, you know, in the water. So it's almost like it feels like, you know, maybe that's making my softball swing, softball muscles stronger. It feels like it's the right thing to do. Like, you know, you practice your whole swing all the way through and you're like, in the water, it must be making me stronger.
I'm sure it is.
All right, let's make a transition from the swimming pool to the practice field in Bourbon A. The Bears practiced today. Alshon Jeffrey in midseason form on whether or not he's going to play in the preseason game. The Chicago Bears play the Denver Broncos on Thursday. Adam Hoge is with WGN Radio Sports, WGNRadio.com/Bears. He joins us now. Adam, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Justin.
All right, so let's start with the story of the day, which again just seems to be the way that the Chicago Bears like to tell us that maybe someone's going to play, maybe they won't.
Well, this seems to happen every year, and I think it's somewhat understandable because they usually don't really decide their game plan until the day before. We don't have access to them the day before the game. So, you know, I think right now John Fox probably doesn't necessarily know if Alshon's going to play. Probably has a good idea. Alshon did a little bit more in practice today, but was not full go by any means. And look, both John Fox and Jay Cutler have said in the last 2 days that it's important Alshon gets out there in the preseason. But I don't know, you need to force it in this first game if he's not 100%. That seems kind of silly.
All right, so what were the big highlights today? As we get further along in camp, and camp's getting closer and closer to wrapping up, what are they working on when it comes to practice? I mean, are they getting full drills in? Are we getting to a point where you guys are getting a better look at what they're thinking about offensively, defensively?
Well, we've seen a lot of play action. We've seen them use a fullback quite a bit, and I think they're still trying to work out if one of those two fullbacks they have on the roster right now is worth keeping on the 53, and that's going to you know, change a lot of their playbook. It's going to either include a package with a fullback or just cut it out of the playbook completely. So that'll be something we'll be watching. A lot of special teams work today, and some two-minute drill stuff, which was really interesting at the end of practice today. Actually, you know, the offense got all the way down to the four-yard line. This was the second teamers because the first teamers aren't going to face a two-minute drill.
Right.
Yeah, on Thursday night, they're only going to play the first quarter, so you're not going to have any kind of two-minute drill stuff. So the second team's out there, Brian Hoyer at quarterback, and they had two opportunities to score a touchdown there at the end. Rob Hausler, tight end, just dropped an easy touchdown. And then on the very next play, which was the last play as time expired, Brian Hoyer had Cam Meredith, wide receiver, open in the end zone and actually overthrew him. So to get all the way down on the four-yard line and not come up with a touchdown, Dow Loggins was visibly upset, as you can understand, the offensive coordinator, and he tossed his walkie-talkie on the ground. That's the kind of stuff we're seeing in practice this time of year, and you know, ultimately we're kind of at that point where we want to see these games because that's actually live action where they can actually tackle and hit each other, and that's really what's going to determine a lot of these jobs.
There was I saw this morning, and I love when they do it. Deadspin puts out the Why Your Team Sucks series. It's a great series where they're just negative.
That.
They did the Chicago Bears, talked a lot about, and what I forgot about at the beginning of the season last year, the Bears really were offensively impotent. They set records where, you know, there was one point where they had nine straight punts and things of that nature. But I forgot about that. Is that something that we're worried about in Chicago, the idea of starting slow or adjusting and having sort of a limited offensive production early in the season?
Well, I think that punt game where they punted every single series of the entire game was the Jimmy Clausen start
in Seattle. Right.
And that was week three, if I remember correctly. Right. So, you know, that wasn't completely fair. It was funny for Deadspin to pile on. Those are always funny when they do those Why Your Team Sucks. And I got a chuckle out of it. Especially when it said that Dow Loggins looks like a 10-year-old with his hand caught in a Cheeto bag. That was funny. So, look, I actually think that when the season ended, I was impressed with what Jay Cutler was able to do with really none of the wideouts he was expecting to have for most of the year. I mean, we got to the point late in the season where you got Josh Bellamy, Deontay Thompson, and Mark Mariani out there, you know, as your three wideouts going into a game. And I think just having Kevin White, who continues to look really good, guys, I can't stress that enough. You know, huge for him to stay healthy right now through the preseason. But that's something that I think Bears fans will be excited for Thursday night, because Kevin White should be out there, and I think they'll see him look pretty good with Jay Cutler in this game against the Broncos.
Let me ask you, Adam. I'm interested. I mean, when we say Kevin White looks good, are we expecting the kind of production that a number one receiver brings to, say, you know, one of these, you know, like the stuff that's happening in some of the more playoff like teams? You know, I think of the Steelers. I think of other places. Is Kevin White at the level where he's going to be bringing in 7-8 balls at 100 yards a game?
Well, let's not forget he's never been on an NFL field before in a game. So I don't want to put those kind of expectations on him right away. I think he has that potential, though, Justin, for sure. And he should. Number 7 overall draft pick, you should have that kind of potential. You should be a Pro Bowler, by year 3 in your career. So I don't know if that's going to happen this year. He's going to be competing with Alshon Jeffrey, obviously, for targets. But here's what I would say is a fair expectation. When Alshon kind of came on in his second season with Brandon Marshall also out there with him, he had a pretty big year. And that's kind of what I'm expecting from Kevin White this year, to be a really, really good number two in an offense where you have two go-to weapons at wide receiver. That's what I think should be the expectation for the season with those two guys. And I think Kevin White has the ability to live up to those. Now, he's a little bit of a different wide receiver. If you're kind of interested in how they're going to use him, it's going to be a lot of catch and run type stuff, where Alshon's more of a go up and get it. High point the football.
Are we talking like a lot of wide receiver screens and like 2 yard kind of hitches where he's going to then be expected to use his blockers to pick up extra yardage?
Absolutely. Bubble screens on the outside. And I'm not saying he can't go up and get the ball. He can. You'll see some deep. He has the ability to go over to the top too. So, you know, I think there'll be some deep throws to him throughout the season. But
I speak
also
for
some
all.
Quick slants. What Larry Fitzgerald does so well for the Arizona Cardinals throughout his career. That, to me, when I watch Kevin White on the practice field, that's Larry Fitzgerald.
Okay.
The 5, 10, 15-yard slants, and he's catching and running, getting a lot of yards after catch. I think that's what Kevin White is.
Yeah, I speak for all Chicago Bears fans when to that sort of meh response when you say bubble screen. It brings us back to John Shoup and Marty Booker, and you're like, I don't want to see that stuff.
Well, I'm, that's going to be part of it. I don't think that they're just going to focus on that because he does have the ability. You got to remember, though, he at West Virginia, they lined him up primarily on one side always, and they did not ask him to run the entire route tree. So he's still learning on the fly here on how to be a complete wide receiver. He's also, I don't want to say struggling, but still going through the growing pains of getting used to the playbook and knowing where to line up on every play. So that's why I'm just not willing to put him in the, he should be a number one wide out and be one of the best wide receivers in the league right away. I think he does have that potential down the line, though.
Okay, so two more questions. One about the offensive line. Ted Larson is stepping in as center. We heard the classic Jay Cutler clips. You know, he's a pro. You know, he's such a pro.
He's a pro's pro.
He's a pro's pro. It's classic Cutler when he does any soundbite. But how did he look today, and does it feel like the offensive line's not going to lose anything by losing Grasso for the year?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're saying. Based on my observations through 2 days, which is obviously a very limited sample size, he's fine. You know, he's stepping in there. I don't notice anything big. I did see a couple missed assignments. There was one session today where I thought the offensive line was really struggling to block everyone they were supposed to on the defense, and it looked like there might have been some missed assignments, and that usually has something to do with the center. But that's to be expected, I guess, 2 days into the guy just moving to center, and he hadn't played there at all with Jay Cutler yet in camp. And I also saw some low snaps today, too, from Ted Larson, and that's something you want to work out, too. I think those are things that are understandable when a guy's suddenly thrown in there on Sunday or told on Sunday during an off day that, hey, when you get back here to Bourbonnais tomorrow, you're going to have to play center, and you have two practices and a walkthrough before Thursday's game to get it going.
It's so interesting to me as a novice layman man who doesn't really understand football at its core, how an offensive lineman who plays guard, who follows the ball and blocks, can easily just make a transition to the guy who hikes the ball. I feel like that, I don't know how anyone can have that as a backup skill.
Yeah, I think it's just something that you have to work through in repetitions, and I think that's kind of why, like right now with Cody Whitehair, who's penciled in as the starting left guard, the rookie out of Kansas State, what he's really been doing is, okay, when the ones are out there, he's at left guard. When the twos come out there, he gets a breather. When the threes come out there, he goes in there at center and takes a few snaps at center, and just to kind of
keep that
in the back of his head that, hey, if something else happens here, if Ted Larson goes down, you might have to be the center. And Larson was taking some reps at center too at the beginning of camp. He wasn't doing it with Jay Cutler though; he's doing it with the backup. So that's kind of
how they do it.
Yeah, and it's a different mindset too when you know, hey, you are going to be the center, as opposed to, oh, you're just kind of getting work with the threes right now just in case.
Yeah, you know football. I mean, as an offensive lineman, when they get into high school and college and that's their job, are they trained? Are they more adept and they understand the center position so they can sneak in or move over if they have to?
I think it's an individual case for anybody. Cody Whitehair played most of – If I'm not mistaken, he may have played all five positions at one point in his career at Kansas State. At least, I think, both guard and you know, he actually ended at left tackle last year. So he's already going from left tackle to left guard, where his body type is a little – I think we kind of knew that when they drafted him, that he wasn't going to be a tackle in the NFL. He's a little bit of a shorter, wider, more stout guy that you would put in the middle of the offensive line. But I do think he has some experience at center before the season, and he's certainly getting some reps there right now just in case.
All right, tomorrow night we need to talk about what to look for in this preseason game, what matchups, who's the second and third team, because I'm gonna tape that game, I'm going to watch the whole thing, and I want to know what I'm supposed to be watching for, especially when it comes to third and fourth stringers when we get into the fourth quarter, and you're like, who's number, you know, who's number 20? I don't even know there was a 20. I guess 22.
It happens to me every day in camp still right now. I'm like, wait, there's a number 43 on defense?
So good. So we'll be counting on you tomorrow. Adam Hoge, WGNradio.com/Bears. You can check out his podcast, Intentional Grounding. Of course, he's a Bourbonnais. He's also the co-host of The Beat, which is on Saturdays. Adam, talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Justin. Baby, shoot.
John Shoop. Shoop-a-doo.
No.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. Coming up at 9 o'clock, how to keep those rabbits away from my perennials, my annuals, my hydrangeas. We'll talk about summer gardening, late summer gardening. There's a lot that goes into getting ready for not only keeping your garden legit for the next couple months and the sort of hot time here in Chicago and the Chicago area, but also to get ready for the fall and ultimately for the winter. Jacob's back from Botanic Gardens. We'll talk with him coming up here after the 9 o'clock news. Gawker Media just put out a piece that's essentially just a troll piece, or what do you call it, like when you are just – is it a troll piece? I don't know. It's just someone saying that Papa John – they put this on their homepage too. Papa John's Pizza is the best pizza in Chicago. Don't have any problem with Papa John's, but this is some, you can obvious it's a letter that's sent to Gawker, and Gawker put it up on their site.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting a gazillion hits because everyone's like, how dare,
clutching my pearls.
Yeah.
My fainting couch.
Y'all know Zabarro, the best pizza.
Yeah, so no doubt. Toppers.
Oh.
Toppers gets it done. For 79 cents, you get some more ranch. Works real nice. No, I'd love to. We should do a segment on, maybe we get Luisa and Monica have done a ton of stuff on pizza over the years. But there is, you know, this whole article, the whole point of it is saying that Chicago deep dish pizza is no good. Giordano's, Lou Malnati's, Pequod's, which is a little bit sacrilege here in Chicago to say that. But I think that the point being that style of pizza, that sort of doughy, you know, sort of hearty kind of pizza, it's representative of Chicago because it's a Chicago creation, but I don't know that every Chicagoan is like gaga for it, especially, you know, here at WGN. That's no. You know, I mean,
I
honestly,
grew up on it.
Yeah, exactly.
It was great. I had a friend visiting from Ottawa, Canada, and where did she want to go?
Right.
Chicago pizza. So I took her not to just any Lou Malnati's. I took her to the Lou Malnati's, the one in Lincolnwood. That's the, and there's people, there's softball teams.
Yeah, right.
I said, you're getting the full-on Grabowski.
But see, that's a great idea. That's the point where I always feel like Chicago pizza is more of a spirit or a moment as opposed to the actual pizza. And so you're right. Going to Malnati's up in Lincolnwood, you're getting the softball teams and the other places coming in. I have a friend who lives in Staten Island. And there's a Staten Island pizza place that's right in the core. And they're like, we got to go. And it was the same thing. Little League teams and softball teams. And you know, pizza was, it was okay, but that wasn't the point we were there.
Pizza without pretense.
There you go. Pizza without pretense. Pizza without pretense. Pretense pizza. We're on something. We'll open up our pizzeria, the download pizzeria. The other big story that's trending, we saw this today, Tarim Killen and Jay Farrow and John Rudnitsky out at SNL. Fired. This wasn't the sort of thing.
Surprising, because Tarim's, they're both really good.
Yeah. You know, The Atlantic had a good piece saying that this cast wasn't gelling, that they were having a problem finding their way. Are they a political cast? Are they, you know, they're doing videos? What are they doing? And it was just sort of, you know, the idea that Lorne Michaels is essentially like a sports team rebuilding and is going to bring in several cast members. That's what the said on that he was going to bring in several new cast members. We had Sharna Halpern in here and other people. They talk about the showcases for Chicago talent. And there's been a lot. Second City, I.O., other places have seen the chatter that, oh, you know, the SNL's back. So
yeah, I know someone who's at I.O. West.
There you go.
And they checked him.
See? So that's what I'm saying. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Chicago has a showing, like some new Chicago people come in, because the writers and the head writers there in Chicago, and you think of the mainstays there, the Cecily Strongs and the 80 Bryants, those are Chicagoans, so it'd be interesting. I still want to play the game where we do the SNL draft.
Best host?
No, I say best, if this was a 1983 or whatever year that was, 84, where they just got Billy Crystal and Christopher Guest and, you know, everybody, Martin Short. They said, let's just get the best talent that's out there to come be on the show. Who would you pick to be a part of the SNL ensemble? And it's never going to happen that way in real life.
People that have been on it before?
No, I would say no. Just the best people that you think would be great on the show right now. They could have their own shows right now. They could be whatever. Like, I would say Amy Schumer would be an awesome cast member for SNL.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's so prolific. She can do so many. She proves it on her show. You know, so it's like that's the kind of thing. Money's no object. Fame's no object. You have anybody on the show.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen that way because Lorne Michaels picks 18-year-olds. So when they hear in 24, he can then put them in the sitcoms and movies that he owns and he continues to make money. Taron Killen's not going away. He'll be the star on the new NBC show, you know, Plumbers. You know, starring Jay Farrow. You know, I'd guarantee it. But I mean, who would you want to see? I think Melissa McCarthy does really great in the host role there. I think she'd be a great person. I think Nick Kroll.
Justin Timberlake.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, he would be good. Think of all the stuff you could do, you know, with the musical comedy kind of stuff. You know who I think would be great? Chris Gethard.
Yeah.
Chris is on, he's in the new movie Don't Think Twice. He's got his own show. I feel like he would be a good cast member. Broad City. Abby and, what's the other one?
Alana.
They're hilarious.
Key and Peele,
right? Jordan Peele. Oh. See, that's what you got, Pete. Come on, come up with one. You can do it.
Like Aziz Ansari, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Now we're talking. See, he was in Supergiant with...
Human Giant, yeah.
Human Giant with...
Paul Scheer.
Yeah. That's a great group, right?
I'm trying to... Like Steve Carell, is he too old? You know, he's you know, he has the Second City background.
He would be great. Yeah, he might be, but he would be, that'd be a good one. See, we could do it like Bob could be in. We can get Martyr, Esmeralda. We could do like a fantasy SNL draft.
Nah, I'm in.
Yeah, just like who you pick with your second pick. And you get penalized if there's no diversity, if it's all white dudes. It'd be like drafting all tight ends.
Let's do it.
Right?
Let's do it before the premiere.
We should do it before they... We should also do it before they announce, because he said next month they're going to announce a new cast. So it has to be this month. Maybe we can do it before we go on vacay at the end of the month. Yeah. So maybe we can do one night, like maybe...
Just 7 to 11. Just do the draft.
That's the whole thing, right?
Do a snake draft, and 10
then,
people.
Yeah. And then it could be like maybe... Well, we come up with the rules on this, because this could be good. You know, that could be something where we could do... Not only you got, you know, going back and forth, but we have to use the Download Nation, like the text, like it's almost like a news or ruse kind of thing where you have to play with somebody.
Yeah.
All right, let's work it out in our spare time. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Finally, tonight we get to the main course. I've been waiting for Jacob to come in the studio so we can get to the bottom of my rabbit problem. Jacob Burns is the curator of perennials at the Chicago Botanic Garden. It's great to see you. Thanks for coming back. I appreciate it. We had a great combo last week. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you have any questions about. We're going to talk tonight about late summer planting, but also preparing the garden and your flowers and your plants for essentially fall and beyond. Mm-hmm. Does that sound good? But first, let's talk rabbits. Punk ass rabbits, man. I will say I'm losing my mind. Last time we talked, I was like, "Well, I have a little bit of a rabbit problem. They're nipping at my hostas." And then in the last maybe month, a family of rabbits has kind of moved in, and they have destroyed it all. As I was telling the audience at the beginning of the show, I'm about $45 into Home Depot at this point. I keep going back to buy little. I'm like, "Oh, I'll replace it with this one, replace it with that," and I just cannot shake these guys. I mean, I know the old sort of Looney Tunes thing where they're always trying to go after the rabbit, but are the rabbit essentially the biggest nemesis for gardeners and for plants in this area?
Yeah, in the city, they're probably the biggest nemesis because, I mean, in the country, you have deer and they can do way more damage than a rabbit. But yeah, there's a lot of rabbits. I mean, I think rabbits can produce like 16 offspring a year. And so,
they're not scared of me, Jacob. That's the thing. I thought like it'd be like, they're holding their ground. I was sitting on my little bench and I was looking at the flowers, just kind of dealing with it. And one of them bounded at me. Like he turned direction in mid, and flew, and I was like, so anyway, I told the audience here too, and I know that you're not an avid listener, so I'm sure you didn't pick this up, but I went on your recommendation and I got the spray, the deer spray, right? Mm-hmm. It's for deer and rabbits. That's what it says. And I sprayed it on my hostas and the plants, and I did the whole thing, right? I sprayed it, and it's got a pungent smell to it. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to shut the door. My neighbors can deal with that, right? Came out a couple hours later. And the plants were completely covered with flies, just flies. It was like gross. It was like they were just like in love with whatever this spray was.
It's probably the foul odor that it emits. Yeah, and so, I think there's like rotten eggs in it probably.
Yeah, then I had to put water on. I'm not putting this back out, and now the rabbits were back. So what can I do to stop the rabbits? I mean, listeners have already texted in. They taste great. Kill them. I'm not going to do that. I've made a choice. That's not going to be my modus operandi here. So what can I do as a gardener in the city to keep these guys out of my stuff?
Well, I mean, there's many options that you could try. Just the problem is a lot of them are kind of tacky or not nice to look at. Fences, obviously. I heard that rubber snakes, might scare them away.
Really?
Fake owls might scare them away. But I mean, the sprays can work, but there's so many different kinds. It's hard to know like which one's best. But the trick with the sprays too, is that once the rabbit gets a taste of that plant, it knows it likes it. And no matter what you put on it at that point, the rabbit will continue to eat it. It's almost like probably putting like a ketchup on something,
So they automatically don't care if something tastes.
Yeah, they know what it tastes like. So I think the trick with the sprays, honestly, is to get it early in the season as the plants are first coming up, before the rabbit has a chance to even know what it tastes like.
Right.
So that might be where the spray failed, because the rabbit had already been eating it.
What about the idea of, and texters are texting around, marigolds, mums, flowers that they don't like?
Yes, so that's another thing. They don't like plants with really strongly scented foliage. You could do like onions or garlic or marigolds nearby. Given that works if you have a sunny situation. But if you're like growing a hosta in the shade, you're probably not going to get good results with marigolds or anything that like onions, because they like full sun
situations. Let's put it into August. So these rabbits are going to be around for a while. They ain't going nowhere. Mm-hmm. Probably have already multiplied. do they split in the wintertime? Do they hibernate? I don't even know what their deal is.
I think what they'll do is probably look for some sort of a shelter to kind of hide in over the winter. And so if you have piles of like sticks, branches,
that kind of stuff, yeah.
things like that. They like to hide in those. Not that there's a lot of those in the city. So hopefully if most of the stuff dies down in your yard in the city, you can probably, they might not have, you know, a good place to hide. So you might be able to scare them out in the winter.
So the idea being that, the idea being that I just want to be able to sort of reset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've already lost this battle.
Right, right, right.
It's difficult for me to say that.
Yeah.
I'm very Donald Trumpian in that way. I'm not going to admit that I'm wrong in any form. But I will say that come winter, I want to reset. So the goal would be in the spring when I plant new stuff is that to also at the same time put repellent or whatever I need to do so that the rabbits just don't even start.
Yeah. Yeah, especially newly planted stuff. I find that rabbits love the stuff with really fresh, tender, like, foliage that had been fertilized in the nursery for a long time. They love that stuff. As soon as it goes in, they go after it.
They know the more expensive stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
They have expensive taste.
They're like,
they
oh, he paid good money for this. It must taste good. Yeah, exactly.
When I'm going up again on Mother's Day, getting something from Gethsemane, I'm like, oh, this is real nice. This is real nice. And they'll get on that stuff real quick.
Yes.
The Home Depot stuff, they're like, well, I'm a couple days. That's all we got. We'll
yeah, it's true. Sometimes plants, like, you could have a fully mature plant that's been in the ground for like 5 years, and they might not touch it, but you can add that same plant that's fresh out of the nursery, like a little young one, and they might eat that one because, like I said, it has like fertilized, it'd been fertilized, it's got all this fresh tender growth. So yeah, it's interesting. They love the new
stuff. I can't tell you, Jacob, these punks, they every single, I had a nice purple and pink like in a and we'll talk about this, is inside a container, and they just ate every one of them. Like
what
I came
it?
Out, it was, I gotta remember what it was. It was something I got. It was like a, it was a, almost like a hanger, but I put it in the ground, like in a potted plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it from Home Depot, and it was purple and it was pink. And they ate it in a day. Like it was all gone. I came out like 2 days later and it was just gone.
Wow.
And I was like, these punks, man, this is war.
Well, I think.
And I've got friends. Jacob, come in here and tell me what to do.
Yeah.
What friends do you have, rabbits?
I feel your pain. I think you cursed me from our last conversation because within the past like month, I've had a rabbit in my own backyard.
What do you do?
And I hadn't had one there for like 3 years.
What do you do as a?
I've just tolerated it because it seems to only be eating these sweet potato vines that I have in the ground. And it just keeps eating those three plants. And then I have a few like Asiatic lilies where it likes to eat the little leaves off the side of the big thick stem. But those had flowered a long time ago, so I wasn't too concerned about it. But I am getting a little concerned because there's not much left of the sweet potato vine. So if
right.
they do move on to something else, then I'm probably going to have to take some measures.
Well, okay.
Yeah. But
all right.
But yeah, now I have one.
Good. I'm glad that I'm glad that
they
feel the pain.
It's a bad year. At the Chicago Botanic Garden, we've had more than we've
really?
Seen normally too. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I think we're on to something.
They've been very productive this year.
Jacob Burns is the curator of perennials at the Chicago Botanic Garden. We're taking your calls, talking about gardening. When we come back, let's talk about hanging baskets, container plants, and also just the idea of what we should expect from our garden and our plants and our flowers at this time of the year, moving into the fall. Jacob's here in studio. Stay with us. Chicago Botanic Gardens, Jacob Burns is here. He's a curator of perennials. We're talking gardening, really getting into what to do in August. You know, for me, you know, rabbits aside, we'll get past the rabbits. It's hard for me to do so, but we will. You know, I'm always finding myself, you know, I've done all of this sort of gardening and flowering, if you will. I'm not really doing any sort of vegetables or anything to my front area, and I want it, especially in August, because that's when I'm outside, I want it to still look good. You know, obviously mm-hmm. the rabbits have destroyed my front yard. But the point being that, how do I do that? What do I have to do to make sure that the stuff that I planted in the spring stays through August and continues to illuminate my neighborhood?
Well, right now, in early August, we've got a lot of heat. It's hot. We're going through sort of a dry spell right now. So any newly planted things in your yard, annuals, newly planted perennials, tree shrubs, whatever, you're going to want to make sure that they're staying watered. You want to, if the soil's dry, you want to make sure basically that they're getting an inch of water a week So if we haven't had rain in a while, you want to water those. And a good trick to kind of measure that is to maybe put like a coffee can there while you're watering.
Okay.
And so while you're watering, once it fills up to about an inch, then you know that, you know, you've got at least an inch of water.
Okay, that's smart.
Yeah, yeah. And it's best to water early in the morning because that way if you do it in the middle of the day, like when it's really hot, the water will evaporate faster, so less of it will go into the soil. So if you do it early in the day when the sun's down, it will have time to soak in. If you do it at night, you risk getting water on the leaves, which at this time of year, with the hot days and then very cooler nights with humidity, getting water on the leaves and then it going all night can lead to mildew, black spot on certain plants.
You don't want that,
so
right?
You don't want any of that.
312-981-7200. If you got a question for Jacob, now's the time. 312-981-7200. When I go to a nursery or I go to the Home Depot or whatever, it feels like now is where they're going big sale, trying to get rid of stuff. I mean, is that just the idea that this stuff is – a lot of these flowers – are dead after fall and that kind of thing? I mean, what is it? I mean, for if I'm interested in taking another stab at this, even though the rabbits have destroyed me, are there certain plants that work in the month of August that would be good for me to start thinking about planting in the front yard?
Yeah, I mean, places have a lot of sales right now, but it is kind of a terrible time to plant for the next couple weeks because it's so hot, so dry. You're probably going to end up having to water your plant twice as much right now. But you could probably get some great sales. You maybe want to don't do that if you're not going to have time to water it.
Right.
But in a couple weeks, it will be cooling off. We're going to get cooler nights. Hopefully it'll rain. So late August and September is when you can finally start planting.
What are you planting in late August or September?
The sales you're finding at the nursery.
So, I'm only thinking in my head, maybe I'm trying to think like you get to October and here comes that October wind and rain. It's pretty much over, right?
Yeah. So the thing is like right now is hot for the next couple of weeks, but then late August and September is when it starts to cool off and it's best to plant your stuff in late August because especially like evergreen shrubs and trees that need a lot of moisture going into winter because they haven't defoliated, so obviously they need more water than deciduous stuff. It's best to plant that kind of stuff in late August because it has time to establish its roots. Because if you plant something, say, the last week of if you plant something the first week of October, it might not have time to get established before winter sets in, and then it might not make it through the winter.
Jacob Burns is in studio with me. He's the curator of perennials at the Chicago Botanic Garden. The lines are lighting up with different questions, so we might as well get to it. Why don't we go to Liz? Liz, welcome to the download. Jacob is here. What's your question for Jacob?
Well, mine is a really simple question. I'm wondering what sort of weed killer I can use that will really kill the weeds, because I feel that the weeds are just laughing at me. I have spent
like the rabbits.
Fortune on it. I spray them, they fall over, and 2 days later they pop up. They may have brown bits on them, but they keep growing.
All right. Thanks, Liz.
The thing I use is glyphosate. It's pretty much Roundup. But that's what you're using, one of my suggestions would be, I mean, if these weeds are these weeds really big, are they woody?
She's
that's the question.
Line, yeah.
So if the weeds are huge, like very tall, have a lot of foliage, one thing you can do is cut the plant back, and then you'll have less foliage that you need to cover. And you could even maybe get it down inside the stem if it has a hollow stem. And then some things like poison ivy or something like that that's woody, those types of weeds take a lot longer. You might have to do multiple applications on them.
Weeds.
Yeah.
Let's go to Bonnie. Bonnie, what's your question, Bonnie?
Hi. I was wondering, is it too late to plant cornflowers? You know, those beautiful purple, tall cornflowers. And also sedum. Those are sedum are so beautiful in the fall, and they, I'm just not sure if I can even right. find those. But those are two of my favorites that the rabbits seem to leave alone.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, by the way. That's good to know.
Yeah, well, sedums, you'll probably, there's some fall blooming sedums, some late blooming ones like Autumn Joy.
Right.
You'll probably see a lot of nurseries starting to carry those right now because they look beautiful in the garden in containers right now. So those, yes, you can definitely plant. Like I said, if you plant in the next 2 weeks, you're going to be watering a lot. But if you plant.
Right. It doesn't bother
right,
me.
Right. Cornflowers, are you speaking about the annual? Are they annual, like a blue flower?
No, they're purple. Am I saying the wrong thing?
Coneflower.
Coneflowers.
That's no problem. Coneflower, which is echinacea, those also can be planted now too, and a lot of places carry them right now.
Because
they bloom for so long; they'll continue blooming right up until frost. So a lot of nurseries will still have those, and they come in so many different colors now too, and different sizes. But coneflowers are great too. I suggest those for your garden, any garden, because they bloom for so long.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Well, you, thank you, and Justin, you should get a fox or a hawk or a coyote. from the suburbs to borrow for like 1 week.
How great would that be if I brought down to my city block a fox? I'm like, hey, everybody, this is my fox. It's taking care of everybody's problems.
The coyotes and foxes are really scared of people.
Oh, great.
I've had a lot of experience with all of those. But, of course, I live in the suburbs, so...
Yeah, I haven't seen a fox. I've seen rats as big as foxes, but no foxes where I'm at.
Oh, well, you can keep those, but you can borrow my dog if you want.
All right. Thanks, Bonnie. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Let's go to Denise. Denise, what's your question, Denise?
Hi. I don't have a question. I have a solution for the rabbits that I've been using for over 20 years.
Okay. I'm into it.
Okay. So every spring I buy a large container of cayenne pepper or containers, from Costco or... you know, another place like that. I sprinkle it on my plants every morning before I go to work. Takes a bit of time. I do it every day for about 30 days. And then I have no rabbits all summer long.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
So the trick is to get it early
again,
in the spring.
It's
get it early
and
repeatedly. You have to do it every day.
I like
it,
though.
And it doesn't bother dogs, cats, people.
It's just the rabbits.
It doesn't hurt anything. No animal likes it.
I know. I love it. Thanks, Denise. Nice. That's a great suggestion. That's what I'm talking about, because that's the kind of thing that I feel like I also get a victory because it's too spicy for the rabbits and they don't like it. And then they're like, and I'm like, yeah, exactly.
And you can cook with it.
Yeah. I don't like the stuff where like, put up a fence and that kind of stuff, because then ultimately I don't get the satisfaction that they were not liking it. You know what I mean? Like a fence, they're like, I can't get over it. But a cayenne pepper, you know, it's just hilarious. Someone put a little cayenne pepper in somebody's nose, they're like, you're like, so that's good. All right, Jacob Burns in studio. He's a curator of perennials. 312-981-7200. I've got a couple people on. I got texts. We got a lot of stuff to get through here. Here's another one. Let me see. Justin, you need a dog for rabbits, hawk. That's, there you go. A lot of people trying to give me more stuff.
I like all the hawks.
I know, right?
Where do you buy one of those?
I was gonna say, is Royal Tenenbaums, where he's up on the like, what is that? Is that a hawk? Where they're like, I gotta be a hawk guy with the they have to be blind or something like that. I forgot what it has. I've had domestic rabbits as pets for 25 years. I'm laughing listening to your convo about wild rabbits. There's a spray to keep your pet rabbits from biting on baseboards and cords. Some bunnies hate it and some lick it up like salad dressing. See, that's the problem. I think the guys I have, they're just so used to like living on the streets that they're like, I'll eat anything and you cannot stop me. So that's what I got to deal with. Jacob Burns in studio from Chicago Botanic Gardens, 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break to get an update on tonight's news and we will continue. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking plants and flowers and vegetables and gardens with Jacob Burns from the Chicago Botanic Garden. He's a curator of perennials. 312-981-7200. A couple of things we'll get to while people are on the line here. Plants that are hanging plants, containers. I've had this problem on my back. I got two of them for my back area that's right above the deck or whatever that is there. And I feel like those go too. Like I don't do a good job with those, especially when it gets hot.
Yeah, hanging baskets, especially this time of year, by now they get very root bound and they're hanging up there with the wind blowing. And so they dry out really quickly. So this time of year, you're probably watering them daily, if not twice a day. So,
really? Eek.
Yeah. So you can continue to do that, but if you want to make your life a little easier, you could consider repotting them into something slightly bigger or just replacing them altogether.
Okay. So, I mean, how often, I mean, for those hanging plants, what you get, I mean, those are the kind of stuff that I get for $11.99 or something like that. Is it worth it to repot it? I mean, or is it the kind of thing where you're like, okay, this thing, it did its duty for 3 months.
Right. It just depends on how important that look is for you to have.
I just
right
feel
there.
Bad. Yeah. I feel like it's like a living plant. You know, I don't want to be like, you're a little wilty. I'm going to throw you in the garbage.
But they're called annuals. So they're going to die once the cold hits anyway. So, I mean, all right. Yeah.
Cold hearted over here.
But with other containers, those will probably get root bound too. Not the ones that aren't hanging, like ones you have on your steps or porch or something. Those can get root bound too. And at this point is when you could start replacing some of that stuff with more like fall oriented stuff, because a lot of nurseries are going to start having black eyed Susans and mums.
Yeah. So for me, grasses. I mean, I have some annuals and some perennials in my front area that I've been complaining about on the show for the last 2 months. But the, Is there a possibility to replant some fall annuals that are going to give it a more fall look?
Yeah, it'll give it kind of a late summer fall look, and it'll tolerate some of the cold snaps that we might get later in September and October. It'll last for quite a while.
All right, so talk to me about what I need to do once it's hot right now, so you know we don't have to necessarily go crazy. You know, and go in there right now and buy a bunch of stuff. But talk about the things I need to do to prepare for the fall. One of the things that you mentioned is dividing. I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
It's not something you have to do. It's something you can do. Okay. So if you want to increase, like perennials, if you want to increase the amount of perennials you have, now's a great time to start doing that. Well, in a couple of weeks is a great time to start doing that. You could, some of the stuff like bleeding hearts, oriental poppies, irises, you'll start to notice the leaves are starting to turn yellow.
Okay.
They're getting ready to go dormant. Now, while they're still visible, is a great time to dig those up and separate them and make more plants if you want, or okay. share them with a friend. And like basically you can divide perennials all the way from now until the end of September. And like I said, now is a good time to get them in the ground because they'll establish before winter. If you waited to do that the first week of October, they might not have time to settle in before the cold comes.
630 wants to know, what do I need to do to separate daylilies? Can I do this at this time of year? So that answers that question?
Yeah, exactly. Just like I said, I wouldn't do it this week when it's super hot. But in a couple of weeks, you could dig up the clump. And you could shake off the soil, and daylilies have these really tuberous roots. They're really thick. You can basically separate those, but just by pulling them apart. If for some reason you can't pull them apart, you could use a knife. Cutting off a few of the roots isn't going to hurt the plant. You could break them into smaller plants and spread them out and have a lot more.
Wow, man. It's almost like it's a little life hack.
Yeah, daylilies are pretty hard to kill.
But so. Just the idea in general of separating perennials, I feel like it's getting more for my money. I like
exactly.
it. That's what I'm talking about here. Exactly. Now we're getting somewhere. 847 wants to know, can you tell me what to do about the Rose of Sharon coming up all over my grass? What does that mean? Is that a thing?
So Rose of Sharon is this basically a tree form of hibiscus. It comes in many colors, pinks, blues, whites. They're quite beautiful, but they set so much seed, and almost every one of them germinates. And if you don't get them quick enough, you don't pull them out quick enough, they get a really, like, a little tap root that shoots way down really quickly. And when you go to pull them out, it's really hard. It's just like a lot more work than just pulling out a normal weed. So, I just don't recommend planting Rose of Sharon's because they're so weedy. Yes. But keeping them out of his lawn, yeah. I don't know if maybe a weed and feed might help.
Is it a weed?
It's not a weed, but if it's a seed germinating, weed and feed would prevent the seed from germinating.
So that's what that means.
So he could sprinkle, put some of that on the lawn where they're coming up, and that could prevent the Rose of Sharon seeds from germinating.
Okay, so let me ask you a quick question as we get close to wrapping up here. Lawns, I hadn't talked about this at all. Most of the times we're just talking about my situation, which there's no lawn.
Right.
It's just a couple of flowers that I try to sneak in by the gate. But for a lot of people who are listening right now who have lawns and lawn production, how do they keep the lawn working when you get into the hot months? I hope the answer isn't just put a ton of water on it.
Well, right now, you're going to notice because we're going to dry spell, and I've noticed a lot of grass that is starting to turn brown. I mean, like equally brown throughout. If you're getting little brown patches, then that's signs of something else, like grubs or something. But if you're getting like consistent like browning across your grass, then that does mean it hasn't had enough water.
Okay.
And like I mentioned before about that inch of water per week, you can do the same thing. Water your grass. Put a can down to measure it if you want. Make sure it gets enough water. But the thing is about the grass, the turf that we use here usually does best when it's cooler anyway. So in the summer, if it's not getting that water, it's going to start to go dormant. And that's what you're starting to see when it's turning brown. So the chances of saving it, you can keep it alive, but it's dormant. But if you want it to be green immediately, it's probably not going to happen. It's probably going to wait until the cooler weather comes. So come September, it'll green back up.
Okay.
But you might have to live with it looking nasty for a while.
All right. So as we get ready for fall planting, the follow-up question I always get ahead of myself is at what point do I have to start preparing my area for the winter?
Cutting back stuff and all that can happen like in October. So right now, what you're going to do is just watch for, you can deadhead stuff that with perennials, you can deadhead some of them and it'll keep them blooming longer.
What does that mean?
Okay. So deadheading is when like say a coneflower, like we mentioned earlier, echinacea. Yeah. So they keep spitting out flowers all year long. And usually you don't have to deadhead that because the seed heads actually look nice if you leave them for the winter. But there's other perennials like salvias that they'll start to kind of peter out about now. But if you start to cut back some of the old flowers, it'll start putting out some new flowers.
Oh, okay.
So just like cutting off the old flowers and not letting them go to seed because it's going to put all its energy into producing seed. And if you cut off those spent flowers so it doesn't waste its energy on making seed, then it'll put out more flowers. So you can get some perennials to bloom longer by deadheading.
This is interesting. So is that a pretty normal way that most plants do it? So it's the same kind of concept for hydrangea. If you don't actually get in there, if you got one that's just dying on the vine, it thinks it's time to go into essentially plant hibernation?
Yeah. I mean, the ultimate answer is that it depends on what plant it is, but there are many perennials that, not necessarily shrubs, but a lot of perennials where you can deadhead and you can get them to bloom longer.
Oh,
annuals too. Annuals you can deadhead. Marigolds. Some are like self-shedding. Like they'll shed their flowers. But
I noticed with some of the stuff that the rabbits just decimated that the plant wants to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know that it's not. I mean, the rabbit was so selfish and ate all of it. Couldn't leave one of them. Had to eat all of it because it's some reason it's not enough just to eat the one. Just selfish rabbit. I realize that they're fighting to come back, that the plant's coming back. You start to see bulbs popping up. It sort of feels the thing. So is there anything I can do to make sure that that happens after a rabbit so selfishly eats my stuff?
Well, I would not encourage anyone to fertilize right now because what you're going to do if you fertilize your plants is they're going to put a lot of effort into growth. And right now you really just want your plants to tire out and get ready for winter. If they put a lot of extra growth on, then that new tender growth, like that's especially true for roses right now. You do not want to fertilize those. They'll put out all this new growth, and then that new growth won't be like sturdy enough. It'll be too tender when you get into winter, and it could freeze off.
Ah,
hurt your plant.
Catch 22.
Yeah.
You're
so don't fertilize after the first week of August.
No.
Yeah.
All right, fine. I won't do it. Jacob Burns is the curator of perennials. I'm happy to say, a regular here on the Download. I'm learning so much about gardening and about flowers and lawns, and I appreciate you sharing and answering questions from Download Nation. Jacob, thanks for being here, and you got to come back. In September, we can come back, and then probably a good time, like towards the end of the month, to talk
about fall.
Fall?
Sure.
Sounds great. Yeah. Jacob, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, yes, the United States wins the 4x200, whatever that means, medley. Michael Phelps wins another gold medal. I believe that's a gold medal. Again, Pete, I can never tell. Put up. They're all excited, so they wouldn't be this excited for a semifinal. Let's bring Molly Green in. Molly, am I seeing this right? Did Michael Phelps
just won gold.
Yeah!
Again.
Real time.
Like by a ton.
Yeah, that wasn't even close. You didn't
and
even
that was
see
Ryan Lochte. That was Ryan Lochte's big Olympic moment.
He's in this race? He was in this
race?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's his white hair?
It looks kind of blonde
tonight. Well, how about it? Michael Phelps, Ryan Lochte, and the rest of the relay team win gold in the pool. Molly Green is with us tonight. We are fan jamming the Olympics all week long. Molly Green, and she's watching the primetime Olympics, so we don't have to. So tonight, the U.S. seems to be really pouring on the gold medals.
Yeah, and with this race, I'm not sure it happened. I'm sure they'll talk a lot about it, but it was like Michael Phelps ran they're going to show it right now. Like, he broke his cap, and so he had to borrow Connor Dwyer's cap. And he wasn't ready when he was supposed to swim his leg, and it seemed like some chaos.
Did they stop? I mean...
No, Connor Dwyer just gave him his cap.
But, I mean, is the race going on while he's doing that? Because he's in a relay, right?
Yeah. That's
awesome. Yes. Michael Phelps is such a star that they're already racing, and he's like, let me get up there. Okay, I'm ready.
I know.
Nerve-wracking. Okay. There you go. The U.S. team seems to be winning in the pool tonight. Katie Ledecky also wins along with Michael Phelps, correct? The theme of tonight seems to be the big hitters are doing their thing.
Yeah, and it was cute when Michael Phelps won because he went, of course, his mom is there, who's an Olympic staple, and his fiance and his baby, whose name is Boomer, is there, and he went into the crowd and was like holding Boomer, and it was cute. So
and I love it that they wear
new
the
Michael Phelps.
All the babies have to wear the chic headphones. You know, they all got baby headphones on.
Yeah.
Listen to their Drake in future. All right, so
what is Michael Phelps listening to? Do we know this? Have you seen anything about this?
I know, it's so interesting. Like, someone should ask him if he's not, maybe he's not giving it up, because obviously yesterday when he gave that weird sort of metal face to the other swimmer, who didn't medal, by the way. He seemed to be listening to something. Everyone said he kind of looked 8 Mile, like Eminem. So, all right. So tonight, obviously, the pool takes center stage, if you will, with the Michael Phelps, Katie Ledecky, and all that kind of stuff. But it was the gymnastics as well, which caused a little bit of an uproar because they won during the day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was planning on starting out tonight by saying, hey, Justin, you know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
When WGN spoils the women's gymnastics results.
I know. I guess
I'm racing to get home to watch the Olympics, and I'm listening to you guys, and I hear the results, and a little tear.
Well, I applaud you for avoiding that news up to that point, because,
all day long,
it was all over ESPN and CBS, and everybody was like, gold, gold, gold.
I've trained myself from the past couple of Olympics where they've been such a big time difference to avoid things. And So.
Well, I mean.
Oh, well.
I think it's weird that they. I mean, it's such a major event. I mean, maybe it's not a major event other places, but why is it during the day? Why not have that be the primetime event? I mean, it's Olympics and gymnastics. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I agree. I don't know why. Yeah, it seems to make more sense to be on at night. So I don't know.
And I missed all of it, so all I know is they won. All right, so what was the best moment tonight? There were a lot of gold medals, but what was the best moment in the primetime Olympics?
That was pretty exciting right there with the cap and them winning again. But, I mean, I think the best moment was Michael Phelps winning, beating Chad LaCroze and him not even medaling. And that was such a, that was a really thrilling, tight race, whereas, like, this the relay was...
Yeah, they just beat him up.
Yeah. But, that Michael Phelps gold tonight was really thrilling and was the highlight. Katie Ledecky was great, too.
How did you watch the gymnastics? What were the gymnasts for the Americans? Were they just dominant?
Yeah, they've shown, yeah. And I kind of got over my annoyance with that because that was a kind of a blowout. Too. They've only shown half of it, and they're just starting to show the second half of it.
What?
Now.
At 10 o'clock? That's ridiculous.
I know. I was thinking, like, if you're like a 10-year-old girl, this is kind of late to be up to be watching this. But it's summer, I guess. I don't know.
So this little montage they're showing with them being all gangster walking behind the flag and everything, that's like in between the actual meet because they taped this. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I have a question and I don't want to give it away. I guess, you know, if people are watching, here's a spoiler alert again, even though this stuff happened at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever. There was a little bit of drama around the idea that some of the U.S. gymnasts were going to have to compete against themselves for the all around for the individual stuff. Mm-hmm. When does that play out to who exactly moves on? Because I think only two gymnasts can go to the individuals, and there was question whether it would be Allie or Gabby. Listen to me.
Well, there's individual apparatus, and then there's an individual all around. So they'll move on to only two of them will go to the where it's the all around.
Yeah, but when do they make that determination?
Tonight, after how they perform. I haven't seen that, but it might. They haven't like announced that on tonight yet, but it's based on like their performances.
How they
tonight.
Did, yeah.
I think actually now I'm questioning myself. Is it based on what they did two nights ago?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a story that I missed somewhere along the line. If it's because Gabby kind of didn't do so hot in the floor routine, and I was watching that moment, and I was like, oh, interesting. She might not even make it to the
I think she'll just do uneven bars
for this.
Is it? Yeah.
All right, so what was the best broadcast moment tonight?
I was thinking about that, and it brings up something that I'm missing, and they haven't been doing the, like, stories that they usually do.
Right.
So that's what I'm looking for with a best broadcast moment. I mean, obviously there were some thrilling calls and a lot of enthusiasm, but yeah, I miss those where Bob Costas would sit down with Mary Carrillo and she would tell a story about Rio or a story about an athlete or about a happy ending or heartbreak, and they haven't done any of that. Or I saw a little bit of it this weekend,
right,
but
they're
shortening
those pieces
during
the
prime time. So I'm missing that part of it. And there's very little Bob Costas. It's mostly just events.
That's boring.
So I was talking about Ryan Seacrest last night. And so Ryan Seacrest is the new Mary Carrillo, though. So he hosts the show that's on after the news, the, like, 11:30.
Yeah, right.
So, and tonight, set your DVR because Matthew McConaughey is going to be on with him tonight. And they're Facebook Live-ing it.
Is that like a cross promotion for the movie? Yeah, he's in the Kubo and the Two Strings. That's hilarious. They're even doing cross promotion at the
Olympics. Probably. There's like a commercial for Rogue One, which is the new Star Wars movie.
Right.
And it's like, have you seen that where it's like half Olympic athletes, half characters from that movie? And they're going to debut the trailer Thursday night or something. So. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's some kind of synergy going on.
Let me ask you, I mean, what was funny tonight? Was there any absurdity? I mean, obviously the cap breaking off someone's head.
Yeah, I don't know. Just Ryan Lochte makes me laugh. And I started looking him up, and he has, like, his girlfriend is a playmate, and they're taking all these, like, sexy photos in Rio. And so I just enjoy seeing Ryan Lochte.
847 says all-around gymnasts were determined the first night of competition.
Okay.
So right. What is that? Okay, answer my question then. Like, 847, I thank you for that information, but who's actually going? Do we know that? I mean, we must know if it's already been determined. It's not a spoiler.
Can Pete look it up for us?
Yeah, Pete will look it up. All right, so anything else we missed tonight? What else should we know? I had the question for you about
I was watching the
men's volleyball. And the Italian team had all white jerseys except for one dude in blue. And it felt like it was pickup volleyball where they're like, can we borrow you? We're short a guy. I got to understand because the U.S. had all the same similar jerseys on.
Well, I couldn't find out. Well, from the research that I did, it's that player is like the best player on the team. And he can play like any position. But there's like some restrictions on it, though. But if they, it's usually like the tallest player who spikes the best. So if they don't want him to play in the back, like waste him in the back, that's
yeah.
Him.
But see, the thing that threw me about this one, and if you're out there, 312-981-7200, answer this for me. He wasn't the tallest guy. He was the shortest guy. He looked like the most unathletic on the field. There was a point where I was like, is he sort of like the captain of the team? He's been there the longest. Like maybe he was the oldest player on the team and this was like a distinction of some sort. Like
it
that's how it
that
felt.
They're like the most, they're defensive specialists. So I don't know. Was he playing, did he seem to always play like in the same spot?
Well, they rotate, don't they? Like, and then, like, or
well,
is that just from
that player doesn't have to rotate? Though.
Oh, that's the thing.
Sure.
Oh, maybe that's it. And you know, to be honest with you, the only thing I know about volleyball is from fifth grade, so it's not much I know. 847 comes through. Simone Biles and Allie Raisman. So
and
Gabby Douglas is not doing the all around individual.
And we've got, they're showing Allie Raisman's parents right now, who are always a highlight of the Olympics, if you remember them from 4 years
ago.
They get really nervous.
They get really intense.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. That's our Olympic fan jam for tonight. Molly Green, of course, watching the Olympics primetime, so we don't have to. We want to, but we can't because we're doing the show. Molly, we'll talk again tomorrow night where we hope the Americans go for gold and no one's hat breaks.
Thanks, Justin.
Going down, all right, it's the worst here on the download. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. This, of course, our weekly segment where we make fun of the worst things in society for prizes. It's a simple concept. 312-981-7200. We've got Pequod's Pizza tonight. We're giving away a pillow. I always love that. There's the My Pillow, and it's like, okay, so you. Tell us what's the worst, and you get a pillow. It's kind of great. 312-981-7200. In studio tonight, James Fisher Jr. Nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And also Sarah Albritton. And Sarah has been a download regular here for the worst. She's one of the panelists of, I think you may have the record. You and Soli Santos are up at the top. Let's go to James. You're going to be the show What the Hypnotics, which is at the Laugh Factory at 10 o'clock on Thursday night.
Yes.
And then also the Martin Luther Kings of Comedy. Love that name.
Yes. That's
presenting Black Friday at the Revival Theater in Hyde Park, 1160 East 55th on Friday night. That's 9:30, right?
Yes.
Sarah, you got your podcast, Sleeping with Sarah, which you can find on iTunes, which is a podcast about sleep, about comedy. A lot of things.
And I interview people in my bed.
You interview people in your bed. And you're
I
also going to be
invited.
You have not been invited yet, but you will. And Zany's is on August 15th at 8 o'clock. All right. Yeah. So we're both here. Great. 312-981-7200. Let's start it off like we started off every week with Pete Zimmerman. Pete Zimmerman, are you ready?
I am indeed.
All right.
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
When you try to watch something on demand. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowed to fast forward.
Oh, that is the worst, man.
You know, like, yeah. Especially if you have, you've fallen asleep during a program.
Right.
You know, and they just want to go back to watch the last 10 minutes. Yeah. And then they don't allow you to fast forward. Or only, they only, you know, there's like a beep, 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 beep. You know, yeah. There's like three different levels of.
Oh, yeah, no.
And only the slowest.
I almost will go out of my way, even if I enjoy a show, if they say fast forward has been disabled, I'm like, I'm out.
Just give up.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't have enough time. I mean, I will, as you know, I continue to show my love and affection for Keeping Up with the Kardashians, one of my favorite shows. It really is. And it's actually gotten so much better now that Kanye West is a part of it. Like, he stopped being like sort of a shadow guy. He used to be like, last season he was like, he wouldn't be on it. And now he just embraced it, so now he's a character on it. And you're like, Kanye West is a character. I keep me on the Kardashians.
I have a question. Does he talk like his Twitter?
He doesn't. He's very subdued. He's a family man.
They probably cut all the Twitter talk.
Yeah, he's not cut it out. But I'm telling you, it's worth anyway. My point being that's a show that lets you fast forward, so it's worth watching. But there's a lot of shows. You're right. You know what it is? It's any of the major networks.
Yeah.
ABC, NBC, CBS, they're the ones that are like, fast forward, maybe may not work. And you're like, all right, I'm out. I don't need to watch a sitcom that I didn't care about.
We need the ratings. Just watch it.
Yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's keep going. 312-981-7200. Let's start with Sarah. Sarah, what do you got?
The worst is when you see your family for the first time in a while, okay, and you found out that up until last week, your dad was a Trump supporter.
Oh, man. up to last week, you convinced him?
No, I didn't convince him. I think just Trump being an idiot convinced him.
Really?
There's
a lot of people out there, though, that may be standard or established Republicans who are like, I'm going to go with the Republican candidate. And after a while, they're like, all right, this is too hard.
He was actually just like, yeah, he's crazy. Hillary's going to be the next president. That's basically what he said. And that was a lot for my dad to say. He's from Kentucky, Republican from Kentucky, to give you some perspective.
There you go. So it's not the worst. It actually turned in something different,
I guess. But just finding out that he was like a supporter, it's one thing, you know. It was just like,
is it going door to door?
It's like finding out your sweet grandma who bakes you cookies used to hate black people. Like,
what? All right, James, what do you got? What's the worst?
Mine's a little stupid because I don't get frustrated about a lot. It's just the worst when you get a bag of chips and you open it and it's just like somebody crushed the bag before when they were handed, so it's just a bunch of crumbs, so you don't get a solid chip, so you gotta dip your whole hand in the bag. And then you just pour crumbs, try to hit your mouth, and they're all over your mouth. And then somebody walks past, and they look at you like you're some kind of pig. And then you try to explain to this person running away from you, no, somebody crushed the chips before I got a chance to. And now you look like a crazy person with chip crumbs on your mouth.
That is the worst. That is the worst. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's go to the text. 262 says, the worst is when you're excited to sell your car at a dealer. And they offer you $50. I mean, what kind of dealer offers $50?
$50? What kind of car is that?
There's a lot of follow-up questions.
Does it actually run? Is it a child's car? Is it one of those like go-karts?
One time, I did that where I went to sell my car and be part of like the down payment for a new car, and I had just smashed it up, like on the side. But it was kind of a newer car. I was just trying to get rid of it, and they came out and they're like, nope. And I go, you know what? Come on. I know what the deal is. You want the car or not? Like, I got real like mad that they were even questioning why this like crushed side. And I'm like, you think I'm dumb? You think that you can't go fix this with a hammer in 2 seconds? You know, take it. And they totally were like, all right, fine. they gave me like the blue book for it, even though I smashed it up. And I was like, wow, that's a victory.
Because they're just going to take it and fix it. Or if they take it to the junkyard, they're going to get money for it.
Right.
This is why I will never go to a car dealer like alone. Like, I'll always bring some guy to be either intimidating or something, because they always try to get the girls on that. They're always like, oh, like, it's going to cost this much, and they raise the price or something. They
That's terrible. I've told this story on the show before. When I bought my car 10 years ago, what the guy tried to do, he seemed to be like a new guy, and he told me that the price was different than what, you know, the other guy told me, and I got mad. You're really mad. And he goes, I see you use Gmail for your email. What's that like?
What does that have to do with
it? It was like some weird, like, common, like, he taught in sales school, like, how to, like, okay, when it gets a little heated, maybe change the subject. And that's what he did. And I was like, what are you care? I'm like, it's pretty good. It's nice. I mean, you get a lot of storage on that thing.
Yeah.
You should have looked at him and be like, hey, I see you have shoestrings. How's that going for you?
Like, yeah. Maybe just, he was trying to, like, ineffectively neg you or something in some way.
There's something where they're trying to change the subject and get on the, it's like a sales thing, like we get on the same page. And now that we're talking about Gmail, I can be like, well, you know that 2500 we promised, it's not going
to
happen.
But it has to be something that you're in. Like if you had like a Yankees hat and he was like, oh, you Yankees doing
exactly.
good.
That's what I'm saying. This is a new guy. All he had was Gmail. He's like, go to Plan B.
He still had the handbook out with him. Like, all right, how to do my job.
James Pfister Jr. and Sarah Albritton in studio. We're playing the worst. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get to your calls and your texts. 312-981-7200. It's the worst.
It's going down,
y'all. It's a download on 720 WGN. It's Tuesday night, so it's the worst. This is where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. Tonight, we're giving away Pequod Pizza. We're also giving away a MyPillow. 312-981-7200 in studio. James Pfister Jr. and Sarah Albritton, both comics here in Chicago. James is at What the Hypnotics, a show at Laugh Factory on Thursday night. Also, Martin Luther King's A Comedy present Black Friday at the Revival Theater in Hyde Park. That's going to be on Friday night. Sarah's got her podcast, Sleeping with Sarah, where she interviews people in bed about sleeping, about comedy. That's on iTunes, and she's going to be at Zany's doing stand-up on August 15th. That's Monday night, 8 o'clock. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's get this going. Let's go to Becky. Becky, what's the worst, Becky?
How are you? The worst is you're a print talent agent at a modeling agency in Chicago, okay. And the guy stripping his brains out in front of you at your bachelorette party is a guy you turned down at the agency 3 times already.
What
and you're praying he doesn't recognize
you. Did he recognize you?
Halfway through with his junk in my face, he's like, I got new pictures. Can I come back in and see you? It was a thrill.
Well, that's the thing. When you denied him, like, he had nowhere else to go. What do you expect him to do? He got to feed his kids.
I saw him again, but I turned him down again.
As you should. As you should.
That's a great one. Thank you, Becky. That's good. That's good. Oh, that is the worst.
I like that.
Seeing
one.
Clients that at bachelorette parties and strippers. Okay, let's go to Blake. Blake, what's the worst?
Oh, well, I work in the food service industry, mm-hmm. and I could tell you about 15 different ones, but this is one that gets me. So this lady walks inside, and she's like, I'm like, you know, 2 for inside, or would you like to sit outside? Oh, we'll sit outside, get things going, food, drinks, the appetizers, and then they complain, it's really buggy, or it's really hot out here. Like, hey, didn't you just come from outside? Well, you're outside. It's going to be hot. Did you have, like, a tunnel coming through your car door?
It could have been. She could have been an underground person, you know, who only lives in the subway tunnels.
The restaurant.
Yeah.
The mole people.
Yeah, it's the mole people.
If they were here, you know, I don't know.
That is true. Thanks, Blake. That's a good one. That's true. People complaining. I feel like I've been in that situation with friends who are always like, it's hot. And I'm like, well, what'd you expect? We came in from outside.
I thought you were going to be like, I was that person.
I have been that person, yeah. That's a way to say that on the radio. I have friends who are like that. I don't know. Bugs.
See, I don't like it when it's like too cold, like when it's really hot outside and it's like freezing in the restaurant. That's the problem I get, because it's like you dress for the warmth,
you dress for tank
tops and shorts, and when you go inside, you're like, I need a coat because it's freezing.
Are you the kind of person who always has to have air conditioning?
No, not at all. I'd rather, like, I come from Louisville, from, you know, humidity. I don't mind being hot,
right.
You know?
I'm from Louisville, too, and I'd rather be cold. Like, because you can put more clothes on. After a certain point when you're hot, it's just, there's nothing else you can take. Skin, then you're just hot.
Yeah.
All right, 312-981-7200. 847 says, James, I feel your chip pain, but even worse is when you open up a bag of chips and the bag is already half empty. Which is essentially how chips come.
Yeah, that's all. Like, that is the worst, but, like, it's status quo now. That's just how it is. Like, if you buy a bag of chips and it says 1 pound bag, the bag can hold 1 pound.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't have 1 pound.
That's so true. This bag can hold 1 pound. Yeah. Okay. 630, here's a good one for you guys. Ready? The worst is 8 years after a vasectomy, your wife ends up pregnant. Naturally, a little suspicious, I went and got tested, and sure enough, my swimmers are swimming again. It's like a 2% chance, but it happened. Yay me.
I wonder how his reaction was.
I'd be like, yeah.
He just starts naming people. It was Mark from The Office, wasn't it? Like, what? No. Starts admitting the stuff that he shouldn't.
651 says, here's the worst. Your AC goes out in your car. It's not worth fixing because the car value doubles with a fuel up. I don't know what that means. And then it says, Mark from Minneapolis, go Vikings.
What?
Yeah, all right, okay.
What?
You got it.
Vikings are the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's keep going. 815 says, the worst is biting into a jelly donut only to find out that it's warm goo, cream, or worse, nothing at all.
I feel the nothing at all.
The nothing at all is right.
Yeah, like, because then, like, when you bite into something with jelly in it, like, you kind of like put your tongue in a little bit just to taste it. And if there's nothing in it, you end up biting your tongue. And now you're angry because they gypped you. You spent $2 on a jelly donut with nothing in it and your tongue's bleeding. Like, I feel that.
See, I think that the expectation when you eat something, like one of the worst things is that if you get a bowl of soup and you eat it, and it's actually like supposed to be gazpacho or cold soup and you're expecting it. Yeah. And you're like, if you knew it was cold soup, you might have expected it.
You get your mind prepared for
it. Yeah. Right. But if you eat it, think it's hot soup and it's cold soup. Yeah. That's the worst.
It's like biting into an apple and expecting it to be crunchy, but it's old and it's soft. And you just like, I'm going to die.
That is a good one. I like the idea of biting into a jelly donut and when there's nothing in it. That's the worst. Because then you're like, oh, this is just so disappointing. Like, I thought there'd be a surprise in here and it's not. Now I got to eat this thing and there's no surprise. And I don't even know what I'm doing.
I did that with some cheese sticks once. And even though it was the first cheese stick I bit in. Even though the rest probably has stuff in them, I was like, just take them all back, man.
I don't want
take them out. But give me some wings, make some chickens in there, and the bone gives it flavor.
All right, let's keep going. These are so strange. 262, the worst is having found a perfect park for you and your lady friend, but then the cops show up.
Oh.
Okay.
What's talking about?
That's ridiculous. Yeah, I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, we're not allowed to say it, but you're a dirty man.
Yeah. did I say this one yet? Oh, look at this. The worst is when you get out of a long meeting at work and see over $200 were mysteriously charged to your credit card.
Oh. Like,
while you were in the meeting?
Why didn't he do like a normal person and not pay attention to the meeting and check his bank account?
Yeah, right.
It had to
a normal person, you'd be on that, right?
Yeah, it had to be on Friday they had a big meeting, right? Payday, just check your bank account.
This is what you get for working hard and paying attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're like the rest of us, being slacking off, you would have caught this.
Slackers always when Steve Jobs was a slacker.
Yeah. 262 says, the worst is working a shift with my coworkers. Coworkers, I'm not sure that can tie their own shoes. All right.
I mean, is tying shoes part of the job? Like, do they want a foot locker?
Right.
I mean, sometimes you don't have to, like, be, you know, the sharpest tool in the shed. Yeah, you gotta, you know.
Yeah, right. 708, the worst is the judge for the Blagojevich trial. But they spelled Blagojevich wrong. all right. Let's see. There's a lot of good stuff here. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst for it's where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. Some good stuff. I think the leaders after the first half here, I think Becky and her bachelorette stripper is pretty good.
That's great. A good
one. And I also think that the jelly donuts.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah,
right there.
That's one where you feel like you just feel bad.
Yeah.
You feel bad about your life.
Like, and this is right at the tail end here, and I say that with no pun intended. 708. You know what's the worst? Shrimp pasta with the tail still on the shrimp.
Oh, yeah. That's
I don't mind that as much. Well,
do you eat the tail?
Yes, I do. I'm a madman.
That's very madman.
I eat the whole thing.
Yep. Okay.
I can't do it if the front end's on. If it has eyes, I can't. I can't eat nothing that's looking at me.
All right, so Pete, what do you got? You want to come back with another the worst here? See what we got? Dustin, Pete's got like a million.
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
ATM fees.
Yeah. Is that still a thing?
Yes.
Paying money to get your money? Yes.
And like $3 ATM fees.
That used to be, I remember, I can date myself into being into the late 90s, and you would go to Vegas. And you would be the guy who'd pull out, you know, out of the ATM in the casino, and the charge was $3. You're like, oh my God, They're just fleecing us. I mean, that was the idea at the time, to be now where $3 is like not even a thing.
So now it's like you have to take out a grand every time you...
You got to make it worth it. Like, can't you take
That's
out
essentially 20? What it is. 815 says, the worst is your alarm going off at 5 a.m. on your day off.
Yeah, I don't.
Just not, turn around and go back to sleep.
Yeah, right?
But you got to think about it from this viewpoint. You might have been having a really good dream. You might have been having a really good dream, and then right when the best part was going to happen, and you can't go back into it. There's no way to go back into a good dream.
You're right. You try to think where you left off, but then you're just, it's never going
to
happen.
Yeah, you go back to sleep, and you wake up 5 hours later, no dream. And sadness. You just can't do it.
James Fisher Jr., Sarah Alberton in studio tonight. We're playing the worst. We'll take a break for the news, and we'll come back, and we'll continue. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all. Come the worst, my people come first. You know the deal. When worst come the worst. When worst come the worst, my people
That's
come
bad,
first.
Bad.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's The Worst, 312-981-7200. We've got some great texts and calls lined up here. James Fisher Jr. is in studio. He's his show, What the Hypnotics, is at the Laugh Factory on Thursday night at 10, and then Fridays, Martin Luther Kings of Comedy present Black Friday Revival Theater in Hyde Park, 9:30. Got it. Sarah Alberton, her podcast, Sleeping with Sarah, is on iTunes, the podcast that she interviews other comedians in bed. It actually takes place in bed.
Yes, yes. And, just a regular conversation. No lines drawn.
Well, it's conversation about sleep and comedy and relationships, all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting too because I mean, sleep is a big part of your life. I mean, you are a functioning narcoleptic.
Yes, I like that. Functioning narcoleptic. That's right. I randomly fall asleep, but most of the time I got medicine to keep me awake. So
I feel like if you're non-functioning, you're dead.
Of course, Pete Zimmerman is here as well. Sarah's also going to be at Zany's on August 15th. That's next Monday, 8 o'clock. All right, so let's get into it. Why don't I go back to you guys? You guys got any more of the worst you want to try out on us before I go to the callers? Sarah?
The worst is when you go out with someone and you find out that they're like a vegetarian or vegan and you're like, oh, no, this is not going to work. Because
You can't just make it work?
No, because most of dating is going out to get food.
Right.
And like if you can't agree on the same place to get food, I'm sorry, but I'm going to eat my meat in front of you. I don't care how bad it's going to make you feel. And then it's going to create tension in a relationship. It's just not going to work.
You're already out, but you're already out. Like you can't even overcome that obstacle.
No, because.
Well, like I think you're dealing with people who just like, you're like, I'm a vegetarian and meat disgusts me and I can't smell it. It's like some people are vegetarians, like, nah, eat your hamburger. I'm going to eat this kale. It tastes like a boot, but it's healthy for you.
But it doesn't allow me to actually learn how to cook. You know, like I cook when I'm in a relationship, you know?
Right.
And it's like the only things I know how to cook are like meat based things. Like
there's some fairness to that because, like,
vegetables are okay, but the meat is what I can do well. And if you take that away, then I can't cook.
I like her. I like her a lot. I like her a lot.
James, you got a worst?
Another
follow up on your chips.
Okay, so usually I go like to like at home, like Walmart's around the corner. I go to Walmart, buy a big bag of chips. I hate when I go to Walmart in the middle of the night, and for some reason, that's peak hours. Thousands of people are there, but one lane is open.
Right.
And there's millions of people just in the store folding shirts, and I have to wait in this long line because nobody wants to come up and open. And then I get to the front of the line, the girl's like, and I'm like, go get your friends. Don't side me. Go get your friends for help.
There's nothing worse than having to make a – it's usually Walmart and Target.
Yeah.
And even the Jewel, the big box, because you'll get someone who's doing like the huge order. But you're right when it's sort of like, can you run a Target and get something real quick? And you're like, that means I'm going to be six deep in a line.
It's like, it's not – you can't go to Target open. Real quick. You can't go to Walmart
No, you can't. Can't do it real quick.
Can you go to Walmart real hour? Yeah, I'll do it.
All right, let's go to George. George's on the line. George, what's the worst, George?
Me again. Oh, I'm actually the cause of this worst. So I don't really know for sure. My coworkers.
Oh, we're losing. George, I can't hear
can
you,
hear
buddy.
Me?
No, I can't hear you because the phone is crapping out. I'll put you on hold, but maybe give us a call back, 312-981-7200.
That's the worst, too. The worst. Trying to call on a radio show, and your phone, you try to win a free pizza, and your phone's cutting out.
Trying to make a general human connection, and it's just not happening.
When your phone craps out on a radio show. All right, 630 says, you know, it's the worst, Seth Rogen's laugh.
Okay. Hey, man, that's cutting deep.
I don't even know.
What'd he do to you, man? What'd he do to you? Do you not like Sausage Party? Like,
right. Well, what's your problem? 773, when your favorite band goes on tour but doesn't come to your city.
If they're your favorite band, you should travel to see them.
Really?
No, I disagree. No.
I agree that if you have the, because traveling is a lot of money. Like you might only have the money for the ticket. I bought tickets for somebody who's coming to Chicago, and tickets were like $40, and I live check to check. That $40 was my last. Mm-hmm. I couldn't pay $40 and then get a car and go. Like,
yeah.
Right. No, I would, and I also don't know if I would want to make, I mean, favorite bands, I guess, they don't necessarily mean that I'm like, well, that's going to be a weekend. Got to find a place to stay.
It's
a lot of planning.
I guess you're right. I was thinking Milwaukee is like an hour and a half. Yeah, you know,
we talking about like you in Kentucky and they only going to California. Like,
I
get.
All right, 813. You bite into a chicken McNugget and you see a vein in it.
Ooh.
What nugget has veins in it?
I thought it was fake food, but
yeah, I thought it was just
that's,
like
that's
mashed
probably
up
encouraging.
Parts.
You know, it's encouraging that it's actually alive.
I would just tweet or Instagram that and tag McDonald's and see what check they give you, and then it's not that bad of a thing.
Yeah, but they'll probably be like, it probably helps their cause because everyone thinks that McNuggets are fake food. So the idea that there's veins, they're not fake. They're from chicken. So
I mean, if you go anywhere and they give you chicken nuggets within 5 minutes, you have to assume that it's not real.
Right?
You can't make chicken nuggets in 5 minutes.
The worst is someone calling you and say they'd like to visit because they haven't seen you in a long time. You tell them you're sick and not to come over, and the next day the doorbell rings and they want to borrow money.
Didn't I tell you not to come over?
I thought they would have, like, the doorbell rings and they bring them soup or something, but no, they're not going to bring soup. Hey, no. Feel better. We want money.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear. Here's my plan. I'm trying to start a t-shirt business.
Well, in a way, that's your fault because you let them, like, they try to come over and do it the nice way. Like, hey, let me come over and visit you. And you was like, nah. Then I was like, all right, straight to the point. I need $1,000.
847. The worst is when you keep biting your lip in the same place over and over.
Yes, I've done that six times today. And it hurts right now bit it while I was talking like 3 minutes ago.
Over and over again till it throbs and you're drooling. You don't have the will to live anymore.
I don't know about the drooling part. How many times are you biting your lips, son? How many times are you biting?
I think they're right. All right, let's go back to George. George is on the line. George, can we hear you now?
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you. All right, what's the worst, George?
Sorry, I'm in the middle of Wisconsin right now, so I'm in a dead zone. I'm actually the cause of this worst. You guys can tell me how bad it is. My coworker is obsessed with Facebook to the point where it just annoys everyone in the office. So he left his Facebook on one day, and I secretly went onto it, and I changed his privacy settings so that anytime he makes any status, nobody sees it. So he thought he was a total loser because no one likes him. And this really hurt his self-esteem. He thought that no one was interested in anything
like
he had to...
It's like a science experiment. experiment.
That is so deliciously evil, sir. You are the devil.
Are you the boss or are you just a coworker?
I just sit next to him and I have to listen to how many likes he gets all day, and it's really annoying.
So that you did that out of jealousy, sir. This is not...
I like that, George. All right, George, I like that a lot. Geez. That's actually...
Thank you.
Did he ever find out or no?
Oh, yeah, we told him.
Oh.
I'm devious like that. I also, last year I wrote a software, a program that whenever I send an email invitation out, I send out the an encrypted message and the people that I don't want to come. So then the email invitation goes right to the junk folder so that when they complain that they weren't invited, I just tell them to check the junk folder and they think it was their fault.
Yeah, that's it. You know who did that? I that sounds
a long way to go.
Yeah, that's
very
a lot of
familiar.
Effort.
No, that's a. I don't know if George was first or Nathan Fielder was first, but if you watch Nathan For You, which is a hilarious
love
show,
Nathan For You.
He does that same bit. He does a bit where he writes a code and does it to, you know, there's some people at the office that you don't. And then he goes, it's so funny because he goes over, the guy goes, hey, I didn't see you at the party on Monday. Oh, I didn't get invited. Oh, really? Let's check your junk mail. And he goes with him to find it. Oh,
I didn't see that one. Really good one. I like that show.
That's a great show. 706, this is a good one. The worst is when you go to get your teeth cleaned and the dentist says, oh no.
What? Oh, what?
Damn.
That's bad bedside manner. He's like, I open your mouth then. Good Lord.
Yeah, exactly. The worst is when you gift somebody a pair of concert tickets and they miss the show.
Oh, I had to kill somebody on that. That's the thing.
Well, yeah. Hopefully they asked the date beforehand, you know? Like, if they just gave them concert tickets, hey, here's for concert this Friday, you know?
But
guys got to work.
But you took... I'm assuming the person took them and they were like, yeah, I'm definitely going to go, and then didn't care. Like, I could have went. I could have gave them to somebody who would appreciate them. I could have sold them. Not that you should do that, because that's scalping. But... but you still...
Yeah. James Fisher Jr., Sarah Alberton in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we will do a couple more and then we will award the winners. Sound good?
Yeah.
It's the worst here on the download. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all.
It's the worst here on the download. 312-981-7200. James Fisher Jr. and Sarah Alberton in studio tonight. 312-981-7200. We're complaining about the worst things in society for prizes. We got Pequod's pizza gift cards. We got a MyPillow to give away. James Fisher Jr., What the Hypnotics at the Laugh Factory at 10 o'clock. James, let me ask you a couple questions about these shows.
Okay.
What can we expect from What the Hypnotics?
So from What the Hypnotics, you can expect a hip-hop-based comedy game show. We have games that we make up. People answer questions, like unanswered rap questions. Just questions people ask in rap songs, like Ludacris, that car didn't come out till next year. Where did you get it? And he never answers it. He just asks the question. So they have to answer. So that's one of the games.
Okay.
Then we have rap battles. We get two improv people to come and do a rap battle. And they've been really good. And then we have a musical performance. It's improv based. And we get some of the top comedians in the city to come do it.
It's a really fun show.
That's coming up at Laugh Factory on Thursday night at 10. And then Martin Luther King's A Comedy present Black Friday, which is Friday at Revival Theater in Hyde Park.
Yeah, and that's basically, it's a variety show. We do stand-up. We have four stand-up acts, and then we have a music act on that one. Sometimes we do poetry, and we do sketch comedy and improv.
So all right, there you go.
Show. It's real good.
Check it out, 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst? Yearly employee self-evaluations. That's true. That is true.
At least that means you've been employed for at least a year, though.
Well, you guys are comics, but, you know, you get into the workforce, there's a thing where they like to do that, where it's like you have to do the work to evaluate yourself. And wow. I've worked at places where it's like you have to actually do, like, paragraphs of writing about, you know, how you thought you did for the – you're like, come on, man.
But I would, like – why would – if I was able to grade my own paper, why would I give myself anything less than like an A++?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, is that letter before A?
And then you have to deal. And then you have to deal with the fact that then the boss goes, really? You think you're A++? And then it's like, so it's just like a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no good. All right. Let's keep going here. 214 says people who pronounce Hillary's last name is Clinton. It's Clinton.
What?
Did she say that? Did she say, are you, sir, are you part of the family? Are you a daughter? Are you an aunt?
I think that's really nitpicky.
It's Clinton.
That is.
But hey, all right. Take it to you. All right. You know what?
It's Clontang. Okay. That's what it is.
260, the worst, having a fender bender and ending up in handcuffs in a police car. Then later finding out you were arrested because the rookie cop thought you were someone else. Oof.
As an African American man, I can tell you that does happen way more than you think. So
you end up sitting in the back of a police car, like
he was like, "Oh, my bad, it was somebody else."
Oh no!
So, all right, just it's third time this week, sir. But just drive me off my house. I'm late.
All right, so we've got prizes to give away, and let's see. 708, another solid 2 hours, 19 minutes driving Uber. I think this is someone is just telling me that they're driving Uber.
Somebody just wrote it.
What they do. Like I realize this is not a worst. They're chronicling their night.
Yeah.
Maybe their whole night's the worst.
I think the worst is if you're doing an Uber share and you're stuck with like a really annoying drunk person and you're sober, you're like on your way going out.
Can I ask a question about Uber share?
Yeah.
As someone who's done it and feel like I'm almost always in the lack the social grace for it. Like I feel like I want to engage. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I want to, like I get in and I go, hey, how's it going? Where are you heading?
Like you want to talk to the people?
Yeah, like I want to talk to the other passengers.
All right, so you want to use it to make friends. I just want to use it to get somewhere cheaper.
Right. Like, yeah. Right. But I do, I mean, I don't know what it is, but I was walking, I'm like, hey,
you're too eager, man.
Are you like, hey, do you listen to the radio at all? Yeah.
And it's funny because if I get into an Uber by myself, I'm like, I keep quiet. I look at my phone, but it's something about the Uber share. The other person, I'm like, oh, crazy. We're all going the same way, right?
You're too eager for conversation. It's like going out on a date. I'm like, hey, are you okay? Are you tired? I'm not tired. Yeah.
You gotta wait like the first 30 seconds to a minute. You know, you can't be the first one to speak. It's like a negotiation. You gotta hold on to that power a little bit.
I'm just trying to. You know, bring positive.
See, I'm always afraid society. It's going to be like somebody like I run into like an ex or something. Not that I have a lot
in Uber share, you're afraid that that's where you're going to run into your ex?
Yeah, like wouldn't that be weird?
That would be weird. Because
then
they'd
know
awesome.
Where I live.
Only if you get dropped off first.
Yeah, can you request to say I want to be second in that situation?
I don't think you can request the order.
It's just whoever's first in like where you guys are going.
Yeah, see, that's what I don't like. I like my Uber drivers to be able to work it on the fly. Just if Sarah goes, hey, I don't want this guy to know where I live, then they're able to figure out, oh, okay, I'll hit this area first.
But
instead, it's all GPS driven.
How do you subtly do that? Like if you're in a car, it's not like I can whisper to him without what you whispering.
What you do is you call him on his phone. And then you go, hey, yo, so can you take me home first? And then you look over at, don't look at the dude on the side. And he's like, you know I can hear you, right? Yeah, this dude is beside me and I really don't like him, but I don't want him to know that. I don't really want him to know.
All right. Well, you're getting options here, Sarah. All right. 773 says the worst is being a chubby Chicagoan chasing a CTA bus only for the driver to purposely drive off and then being left there in sweat and regret.
That's aww. First of all, that's sad. Second of all, I feel like it's sad for anybody, not just chubby people, but
I feel like the running part for
chubby people, I guess, but like
it doesn't matter what your physique is at all, because every Chicagoan is sweaty with regret when they miss the bus.
Being chubby in Chicago is the best. Like this is the place. If you want to be chubby, come to Chicago. It's the best.
We love chubby people here.
Oh my God, we do. Oh my, it's so much food.
I mean, and Pequods, you know?
Yes.
Like, there you go. There
you can
go.
Get a pillow that's shaped like you, and it's great. Why not be chubby? Chubby people.
All right, let's do these prizes. First place is going to get a Pequods gift card. Second place, the same. Third, going to get the MyPillow. Guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Visit MyPillow.com. The Pequods Pizza gift card featuring world-famous pizza with a signature caramelized cheese crust. Visit them in Chicago or Morton Grove or online at PequodsPizza.com. Third place, we're going to go with, I just had it lined up here, 815, the worst, biting into a jelly donut to only realize that there's nothing in there at all.
That's Mark from Rockford. That's my favorite one. It was my favorite.
I think that's Yogi Bear's like worst fear.
I just think it's all of our worst fears.
Yeah.
There's just something about the idea of being excited and you know, jubilant about the idea of a surprise in the middle and having nothing.
Because you get a donut. You usually eat donuts at the beginning of the day, so you already starting off your day bad.
You just so good.
You bit your tongue. You're late for work. You stopped to get the donut.
Exactly. It's ruined. Go back home. Go to sleep. Start again tomorrow.
Second place, they're going to get the Pequod's gift card, is going to go to George. George with the he was the one who was changing his coworker's Facebook privacy as a self-esteem I guess experiment.
George, you are a jealous man, but I love it.
Love it. And first place tonight who's going to get a Pequod pizza gift card as well is Becky. She was our first caller. She was recognized at her bachelorette party by the male stripper. Becky, your humiliation and embarrassment got you a free pizza. So that's pretty good.
I am completely honored. Thank you so much. I've heard about Pequod's and have never been able to get over.
Really?
I'm very excited.
There
yeah.
you go. There you go. And now you feel like the next time this guy comes in to read for you or bring in new headshots, you'll feel like he in some way is responsible for not only your joy at the bachelorette party, but a pizza.
And maybe you'll give him a part, like just a background role, just walking around.
I mean, maybe if a male stripper role comes up, you know, yeah, you give him a call. Yeah.
And something tells me he wasn't really good at it.
Or you just hire Jane Fisher instead.
I'm talking about the chubby Chicagoan kind of rolls right into this whole conversation.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, Becky, thank you and enjoy your pizza. We appreciate
it. Thank you, guys. It's been fun. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. So that's going to do it for the Worst Tonight. James Fisher Jr., Sarah Alberton, thanks so much for being here. We'll have you guys back. And thank you all for calling and texting and bringing us your worst here on the download. We appreciate it. That's going to do it tonight here on the download. Coming up next, Amy Guth. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Pretty late with Amy Guth. Good to see Amy. How are you?
Hello. Good to see you.
All right. So what's on the show tonight?
You know, we're going to be talking about lots of different stuff. We're going to talk with our good friend Rex Hupke. Always,
oh, I love Rex.
Always a joy to talk to him. He's so funny.
He is so disliked in some region.
I know.
You know, it's mostly like he's been such a, it's a joy to read him in the paper. He's a great writer. And there's just a lot of people out there that are like, ooh, I think they consider him to be the liberal voice of the Tribune.
He gets a lot of hate mail.
It's really
about
weird. I don't understand it.
But in fact, you know, sometimes he writes a lot of satirical pieces, but when he is not writing satire, his points are so beautifully delivered and so well written and so thoughtful and kind and from such a kind place. And I'm a big fan of his. And
I think
like
he's a great writer.
I think so too.
Yeah. So
I think I love that guy.
Yeah.
So he's going to be on. I'm bringing a wonderful acupuncturist and traditional Chinese medicine practitioner in to talk about the cupping.
Yes,
it's all over
good.
The Olympics. This woman has done cupping on me before.
Really?
Yes.
So you've done cupping
by the woman who's coming.
Do you swear by it?
You know what? Yes, I really do. I mean, I swear by acupuncture a little bit more, but because I have done that more than cupping. But when you need it for certain things, it's excellent.
So we were kind of talking about it earlier about what it does. We kind of were thinking about, is it the kind of thing where it just puts, like the kind of thing where you pinch your leg so your arm doesn't hurt, you know, more? Like, is that that kind of thing? No.
No, it's the idea. And she's going to explain in a lot more depth because this is her expertise and not mine. Sure. But essentially, like, it picks up that subcutaneous layer and allows more room for that muscle tissue to circulate, like for blood to circulate to it and for more oxygen to get to it.
Did it leave the marks on you too?
Absolutely. In fact, she she put a couple of them on my back. And I say a couple, I mean like 15. And the first time she did, she warned me. She's like, I'm going to put one kind of up towards the back of your neck. So if you've got any socializing to do, maybe I won't do that one because it's going to look like the tennis ball size hickey on the back of your neck. And I'm like, okay, maybe not that one.
Don't do that one.
I
don't need the rumors.
It's going to kind of ruin my street cred. So we're going to talk to her.
That's good,
And we're going to be talking to somebody from Quartz all about Earth Overshoot Day.
Earth Overshoot Day.
Which is not a happy holiday. It is essentially, it's kind of like equal pay day, like happy equal. Yeah, no, not even a little bit. Right. It is the day in which we've used our resources for the year.
Oh, no.
And we're on it.
We're on it? Ta-da! On August 9th?
Yeah.
Oh, man,
the first
that's
year.
So that's
the first
disappointing.
Time. I know. The first time was October the 6th, like 10 years ago. And we're moving up.
Oh, my God.
We're getting worse. That's my contribution to the worst.
That's a great segment. That is the worst is our overshoot day gets into early
August.
So we're
going to find out, like, what can we do to try to get it closer to New Year's Eve for next year.
That's so interesting. I didn't know there was that was a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. And we're getting worse at it. We're getting better at failing at the Earth.
Oh, man.
We're getting an F in Earth.
All right, that's coming up next with Amy Guth.